Choose your next words carefully, Leonidas. They may be your last.
Madman. You're a madman. Blasphemy. This is madness.
This is Sparta!
Who do we have left? Britney Spears. Cam Kardashian. Paris Hilton. And that's what we have to look forward to, Kanye West. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. We're global.
I mean, the lines are blowing up.
Shop, S-H-O-P-P-E. Oh, look at you. All right, everybody, I'll be right with you. I'm a good guy. If you attack us, I attack you. Gary Hammer. Hello, my name is Brian Hammer Jackson, and you're with the Brian Hammer Jackson Show. Boy, he was powerful. This is a no-win situation. I'll give you a call in about an hour and a half. You know what I mean? I survived it, and I'm at the end of it.
I muted myself. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. I am Brian Hammer Jackson. As you can tell, my voice is not good. It's early in the morning. It's about 7.05 a.m. California time. The weather is about 60 degrees right now. We expect to be 110 this afternoon. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We are global. Listen to Hammer Radio Network. If you'd like to come into the studio, I can give you the number. It's a private number, but I'll give it to you. You may need it. 319-527-6099. That's the number, 319-527-6099. Today we have a special guest. I've been trying to get him on the show for a week, and he's been trying to get on the show, and I confirmed him last night. I didn't get a confirmation. I'm hoping he's going to be here. I always say that. During the show all these years, we only had six people who missed the show, and three of them tried to come back on, and that didn't work out. But I really am looking forward to talk to Stephen Edwards. And Stephen D. Edwards, he's going to be in the studio in about 10 minutes. Joy at the end of the tunnel. We'll probably be discussing depression, addiction, things like that. And we'll be asking questions about that. I think he has a book. I don't know if it's the book or is he... Yeah, it has to be a book called Joy at the End of the Tunnel. It's a book. And we will have that frank talk about depression and addiction. How to overcome it, I guess. And we'll see what happens. Stay with us. He saw the show, or he listened to the show. He gave me 5 stars. So, and he was referred to by Jane Risden, one of my favorite authors. I call her the blonde across the pond. She's in the UK. So she was referred to. She referred him to us, and she was on our show, and we had a great time with her. The blonde across the pond. That's Jane Risden. I'm hoping that Stephen does show up, because there's a lot of things I want to ask him about. Mental illness, mental health, that kind of thing. And while we're waiting for Stephen. Well, you know, I don't know if people are just cruel. It's a little thin line to walk, whether you're cruel or you have empathy. Here's what I'm saying. I was listening to the news today, and they were talking about those poor bastards in Florida where the condo fell down on them. And they're worried about the weather report, so they brought it down. Now, bad enough that you're under some concrete, and if you're still alive, you're suffering, then you're going to have... And see, I don't understand. You've been around 4th of July. You have heard the firecrackers, and you heard some people throw an M80 or whatever. But if you're buried in that rubble, and then they implode the building with explosives that comes down on top of you, just the explosion alone can rock your world if you're barely hanging on. And I understand why they did it. They're afraid of the projectiles if it's a wind or a storm that's going over Florida right now. I don't understand the common sense that, okay, we got people and they still may be alive, so we got to bring down the building, so you're bringing down more cement blocks onto you. Not only are you bringing that onto you, but you're hearing this big explosion. I mean, this explosion is huge. I mean, it could give you a concussion just hearing an explosion. Then you have the nerve to go, okay, now we're going to do a rescue mission. So on top of the stuff coming down on them, we brought the building down on them again and go, okay, let's resume the search, assuming there's people there. And see, here's what's cruel. I mean, bad enough they had to leave their pets. And the cruel thing about it is they're still calling it a rescue mission. It's like it's been a week, probably more. And the mayor is saying it's still a rescue mission. What are you saying it's a rescue mission? I mean, shouldn't you just say, okay, this happened. Let's go start the grief process. We accept it. Let's move on. Is it fair to say that we're going to give them more hope, or a little ounce of hope, the people who are still alive, thinking their loved ones are still hanging on with one breath, and say it's still a rescue mission, even after we brought down a building on top of you? Just the demolition. I don't understand it. Then you have the nerve to go, okay, let's rescue them. Now you got more rubble on top of more rubble on top of more rubble. And you're still saying it's a rescue mission, even in the greatest circumstances. Now, I don't know how hot the weather is in Florida, but I know it's hot in California. I know it's hot in Boston. I know it's hot everywhere. So Florida is not going to be the coolest place in the world. So even in the condition, the best condition in that situation, that is hot, and you have 7 days or more without food and water, something on top of you that's crushing you, and that's the best condition in that situation, without blowing up the building again and have it come down on you. And even then, you have no chance. 7 days without food and water. I'm sure the heat in Florida is tremendous. I don't think you have a chance in hell, even in those conditions. Now, add the explosion, add the wind and the weather, and how hot is that cement? Because I know when it's really hot here, the dogs can't. And people, you got to be, and when you have a pet, be mindful that if he's running to shade his pet, doggy pads are getting hot, and sometimes the ground can be too hot. So I don't even know if you're buried under some cement blocks that are like probably 80 to 90 degrees. In the best condition in that situation. So why are we giving, I think it's cruel for that mayor to give the slightest hope of saying it's still a rescue mission that these people are hanging on. I think it's cruel. I think now they should kick it in and say, hey, we're going to help and get the bodies out. And I think it's cruel when they say, all right, 10 people are dead, and we found 15 more people dead, and 125 are missing. They're not missing. We know exactly where they are. They're under that building. And they're not coming out. So stop it with 10 alive and 125 still missing. 10 dead and 125 missing. No, it's going to be 150 dead. Let's go on with the grieving process. Let's recover our loved ones and go on with the grieving process. Don't say we're still rescuing people. Because even the best, like I said, even the best condition, being buried under there in that situation with no food and water for 7 or 8 days, not so good. And then we have the nerve to go, okay, let's bring the building down on top of that. Buried those motherfuckers. You just buried them. So don't do that to people. Let them grieve. Go on with the grieving process. Bring in the Godiva dogs. I'm sorry it's cruel, but it's true. I think it's cruel that keep giving people hope when there's no hope, and you know it's no hope. And I have to start thinking it's political now, because it is an election coming up. That's my thought. That's a thought for today. And if you'd like to, we do have an interview, like I said. And we may not have an interview because it's 2:14. And the interview is supposed to be, the interview is supposed to be 7:15. And it is 7:15 now. Oh, shit. I was supposed to call him. I said that out loud. Wow. We'll be right back. I'm waiting for him in his studio, and I was supposed to call him. We'll be right back to make the call to our guest, Stephen Edwards. Wow. You're listening to Hammer Radio Network, and if you'd like to come in the studio, here we go. The number is 319-527-6099, and we'll be right back with our guest, Stephen Edwards, and we'll make a live call to his home. Here's a little commercial Ellen Jade's daughter did when she was 8 years old. This is Aaron.
AG's Pet Crematorium wants to remind pet owners of the importance of spaying and neutering. Shelters overflow with unwanted pets. Spaying and neutering helps to prevent this and has many health benefits, too. This message courtesy of AG's Pet Crematorium at 2317 Washington Avenue in Harvey. Trust their years of experience for all your pet cremation needs. Call AG's Pet Crematorium at 504-362-3311. That's
504-362-3311. A dreamer with the fever to be great with the-
I don't know if anybody can hear me. I'm hoping you can hear me. Now I have my headset on. Let me test it to see if anybody can hear me. Let's see. 316. Can you hear me?
You know who Barry? This is. Bright and early.
Hello, Mr. Barry. Can you hear me okay? I have my headset on.
Yes, sir.
Hey, it's good to hear you. Mr. Barry, I have the interview with Mr. Edwards today. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call him. The interview will last about 20 minutes, and then we continue our show. So during the interview, I just have him on, and I mute everybody. Do you want to call back in 20 minutes, or would you like to stay and listen to the interview?
I'll call back in 20 minutes so I can try to get this work done.
All right, sir. It's good to hear your voice. Thank you, Mr. Barry. Columbus Barry, everybody. Mr. Love and Affection himself. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
I'll talk to you soon, buddy. Thank you for calling in. And we have another guest right here. Let me hear that beautiful voice. Hello, mystery caller.
Hello.
Hello. I forgot that I was supposed to call our guest. I was waiting here in the studio. I forgot to call him. I got to call him right now to do the interview. Because
okay.
What's happening here is a lot of guests are complaining because if they're on T-Mobile, T-Mobile is charging them. The communication companies are charging them to come into the studio. But if I call them or give them a special invite, they don't get charged. So that's why I would call him.
Hmm.
So he's probably waiting for us. Ladies and gentlemen, the infamous and the famous Ellen Jay. Ellen Jay in the studio, everybody. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right. I'm a little late. Let's see if we can give him a call. First time we're doing this on the show. Let's see if he picks up. I hope it's the right number. Mm-hmm. Hope it works. Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Hello. Hello. I am Mr. Chan, and we're outside your house with the delivery for Chinese food. You know, like Chinese food, we made it, we want to you. You love Chinese.
I love Chinese food. I love Chinese food.
Very good. Very good, sir. Mr. Stephen Edwards, everybody. How you doing?
How are you?
I'm doing good. We have my executive producer, Ellen Jay, here. She's going to say hello to you. Ellen.
Hello, Ellen.
Hello. How are you?
How are you? I'm good.
Oh, boy. You got a great sense of humor. We're going to talk about a very serious subject. I am so glad that you and I finally got to talk. There were so many obstacles that we were missing each other, and we finally get to talk.
Yes.
You were referred to by one of my favorite authors, Jane Risden.
Mm-hmm.
I like to call her the blonde across the pond. Jane Risden. But let me give you your introduction and your respect. Mr. Stephen D. Edwards, everybody, here we go. Yeah, look at that, Stephen. Look at that.
That's awesome.
Right.
That's awesome. Thank you.
We're on your lawn. Get off my lawn, you people. Run along. Mr. Edwards, can I call you Stephen?
You can. In fact, you can call me Steve if you want to.
Great. I will. Okay, Mr. Edwards, here's what we're going to do. I'm only kidding. Okay, Stephen, here we go. We're going to talk about something very interesting, and it starts now. The name of the book, Joy at the End of the Tunnel. Okay, Joy at the End of the Tunnel by Stephen D. Edwards. And it's a great book, and here we go. You know, tell us about this book, The Joy at the End of the Tunnel.
Well, it's about how I gained freedom from depression, my battle with and the victory over that depression without drug therapy or psychological intervention.
Mm.
It's a book written for non-Christian audience. My first memoir, The Branch and the Vine, is written for a Christian audience on the same subject.
Hmm. You know, I'm going to ask the obvious question, what's the difference? Because we are dealing about a subject about depression, and we are dealing with a subject, I assume, addiction. So how do you, what's the differential between a Christian audience and a non-Christian audience?
Well, you're right. We all suffer in the same way, but we receive messages differently. When we talk about how I gained freedom from depression, it was through God. So in the second memoir, I explain how those concepts in a more secular way.
Interesting. Really? Okay. Now we're getting spiritual, so I'm putting on my spiritual interview. I like this. We're getting deep. Who did you write the, you know, one time I gave Jesus my problems, and he got so depressed, he came back and put himself on the cross. I'm going, Jesus! All right, it's a, okay, Christians, you're going to hate me. Sorry, Mr. Edwards, I'm sorry. Risden should have warned you about the show, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Okay. Well,
it's funny.
Oh, thank you. God gave me this sense of humor. I owe it to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you write the book for?
Well, it's for anybody who's either suffering from depression or has suffered from depression. Anybody who knows somebody who also suffers. But it's also for the psychologists, teachers who have people, know people, vast amounts of people that are suffering from depression. It's a wide variety of people, but they're also, some of them are very specific.
Right. Because this is a very, it's such a gray area, depression, and when we're going to talk to you more, and this is why I want people to buy Joy at the End of the Tunnel, seriously, because it's such a confusing subject, and depression is not a monolithic kind of problem and absolute. Certain people have certain parts of depression, deep depression, so on, in certain layers of this, that it's really hard to get to the root of it. Do you agree? I mean, it's
completely agree with you. Agree with you. And I tried not to look at the specific causes of it, although I did address what I knew. So I tried to address the whole problem by providing somewhat of a solution to the problem, rather than try to attack the causes, which may have provided more of a Band-Aid effect rather than a true solution.
I like I like the way you think, and you may be the first person that can actually say the word solution. And a lot, are you a doctorate person, or do you have a degree, or are you a psychologist, psychiatrist, counselor?
I don't even have a degree, Brian.
You know what? I like you already. I like you already. Well, two reasons why. One, you want to solve it. You're not going to do a Band-Aid by medication. I mean, come on, that's just more money for the pharmaceutical company, big pharma. It's not fixing the problem at all. But
I didn't want to say that, but I'm glad you did.
No, it's true.
It's true, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Depression and mental illness is big money for pharmaceutical companies. Are you kidding me? I mean, you give me somebody with mental illness, I can put my kid through school and his friends if I was a doctor.
Yes.
Funny but true. I like it. Oh, God, I'm getting into this. What do you think, Ellen's pretty good, huh? I like the word solution. I really do.
Yep.
What is the most important idea you are sharing in your book that would add value to the reader's life?
Well, it's that depression is really, it's really just a condition. And it's a condition that can be helped. It can, it has a solution, as we have discussed already. And it's not in the things that we typically think of. It's not in drugs. It's not in, it's not in necessarily in psychotherapy. It's not in, it's not in a lot of things, but it's within us. That's where it is.
And that lies the problem, I would think, and why so many people can't get out of this situation. Again, I have no degree. I'm just going by life and friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
I like what you're saying so far. And if you could compare this book with any other book out there we might already be familiar with, which book will it be and why?
Well, that was a very good question, and I had to really research what this could be compared to.
Right.
And I searched for a very long time. I looked a lot of books. There was one book by a Christian singer by the name of Laura Story, and I can't remember what it was called. Now, let's see here. Can't find it. It's not here in my document here. But look up the name Laura Story, and you will find it. She's only written one book, and she goes through some of the same things and provides a solution as well. And that was what I compared to.
Really? I did pull in a Laura, L-A-U-R-A.
Yeah.
It seemed like she's a musician. Is it this?
She is.
Same, what?
She is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it says, not getting away from your interview, but just going with clarification about, since you referred Laura Story, she was an aspiring symphony conductor.
Right.
I wonder, did she go through a lot of, again, I have to read it really quickly because I don't want her to, you know, blah, blah, blah. She tried her hand at songwriting, and I'm getting to her problem. She's also, I guess, a very religious person.
Yeah.
She believes God is the higher power. She believes in that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good. That's good. That's good reference.
Yeah.
I get an idea who she is. How long have you been religious? Are you a born again, or have you always been a religious fellow growing up?
I grew up in a Catholic family, but we rarely went to church. We rarely went to church, and I didn't understand the scriptures. I didn't understand the teaching. The only thing I knew was that Jesus was somebody,
right?
To be honest, and I knew that he'd done some things, some miracles and things like that. And that he died on the cross for some reason. And then a few years later, after I graduated high school and told my dad, I'm not going to believe in Jesus, I'm not going to believe in God. Many years after that, I was led to church by a girlfriend who, as it turned out, was not quite born again yet herself.
Okay.
And became a born again Christian as
wow.
a result of going to church several times.
We hear that
yeah.
term a lot. We do hear that term a lot, Stephen, born again. And we can use our common sense, but it's born again. Anybody can say, okay, fine. You believe in Christ again. Well, you know, what is the definition from a true born-again Christian? What is that meaning or that phrase really mean, born-again Christian?
Well, it actually comes from John 3. You may know heard of the verse, John 3:16. But he was speaking to a leader of the Jews at the time. And
right.
he said, how can I be born again? Am I going to be able to go back into my mother's womb and be born again? Which seems like a silly question, but Jesus addressed it and said, no, it's more, he basically said it's more of a spiritual awakening, your spirit is being born. So it's that's what they mean by born again. And sometimes the translation doesn't come from the Greek in this case. over to English as well. So it may not actually mean born again. It
right.
may mean like a spiritual birth.
Okay. Now I got a better understanding. I just, when you were talking about, he was talking to talking about the leader of the Jews. The only one in my mind was Bernie Sanders going, "Oh, what percent can be born again? And what percent you gonna get help from the doctor? You got, you know, I get that Bernie in my head." Okay, but thank you for explaining that. I really appreciate that. And how did you arrive at the decision to write Joy at the End of the Tunnel? Joy at
well,
the
actually,
End of the Tunnel.
Yeah, I actually wanted to write this one first. And I had a frustrating time with it because I was trying to basically write it from what I knew,
right.
because I had explored the scriptures, I'd studied a lot, and tried to explain it from that point of view rather than the point of view which I took after I wrote The Branch and the Vine, where I went more deeply into the scriptures to explain things. So then I thought, okay, now I'm going to revisit this and I'm going to do it properly, like and explain things in different terms so that the non-Christian can believe that it's possible to get freedom from depression, and that's the sole goal. Because we all need to have that, and even for the person that hasn't had depression for a long time, hasn't figured out how that ever happened that they got freedom, then now they can understand.
It's going to be an ongoing. You may have the technique, and we'll find out your secret, because I am all about solution and I'm all about tools. And maybe you do have the tools where one can cope and reach back into these tools to combat whatever. I just want to use the word, back of any other word, demons that they are dealing with psychologically at that time. But I'll go a little deeper. The subtitle of your book is How I Gained Freedom from Depression. Now, have you discussed the causes of depression in the book?
Yes. I looked at perfectionism, which I suffered from and still do to a certain extent. I looked at the comparison trap. You know, I wish I had what you have. I wish I didn't have what I have, and I wish I had... I wish I had that nice Cadillac that I can't get, you know, all of that stuff, which just brings a person down. I looked at anger, a deep delve into anger. I looked at hate speech and how it affects ourselves. I looked at not having boundaries in our lives. And I looked at anxiety. Which is another form of mental illness, but it's closely tied. Often people do have that when they're depressed. I also looked at I can't remember the word now. I suffered from. What kind
forgetfulness?
Of thing?
Forgetfulness? I'm joking.
Forgiving? Forgiving is one of the tools.
But
I'm looking for a specific word, and I can't remember what it was. It's very important. Forgive me.
It's okay.
I looked at alcoholism and drug abuse those kinds of things. That's the word that I'm honing in on is tied to that. What the people go into recovery for.
Right.
and it's escaped me for some silly reason.
Well, it'll come back. Trust me. You know, mm-hmm. I'm the kind of guy, and I can feel this from you. Mm-hmm. I don't like people preaching to me who have never been there before or heard it from a friend or this or this, or they saw it from afar. I mm-hmm. like the person who's been there, who's been to mm-hmm. the bowels of hell. And they mm-hmm. can describe what hell is. I mean, you know, it's fire and there's a bedroom over there and that red guy over there keeps yakking. He kisses on my nose. Who've been in the bowels of hell. It sounds like you've been in the bowels of hell. I don't know you. We have not talked on the radio before. We did not do a pre-interview. But please tell me if I'm wrong, if I'm right, because I usually have a good feeling about a person. But for you to really get into what you're getting into and feel what you're feeling, I would have to ask you the question. You must have been in a very dark place where you have contemplated suicide many times. I'm going to go there, and please tell me if I'm right or am I wrong.
You are correct. Yes, I have contemplated suicide. In fact, the moment when I last had one of those moments, the time was it was a little while ago, probably 4 years now, I think. Mm-hmm. And basically, I hadn't made plans. It was done. I was going to do it, and it really, you know, I really wanted to do that. I wanted to get out because I was in a job where I wasn't getting anywhere, and I wasn't able to provide for my family, and I was just done, and I was going to declare bankruptcy so that I wouldn't my family wouldn't have to bear that burden. Mm-hmm. And once it was done, I was going to be over. Mm-hmm. Well, within a week, troubled one day, I was in a recovery meeting there's that word, addiction. I couldn't get anything to work right. I was supposed to be leading this meeting, and nothing was working right.
Right.
So then I ended up starting to pray. And prayed for the demon of or a spirit of suicide to leave me, mm-hmm. and lo and behold, it did. It went. It left, mm-hmm. and that was the time that things started to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. a year later, I had that freedom from depression that we're now talking about.
Do you own that to your spiritual faith in the Lord that you are here today? As in, like you said, you prayed that demon of suicide, it left you. You saw the light, I would assume. Do you mm-hmm. do you praise God for that and to pull you through
from
the best of hell? And if you believe that you did not have God or faith in your life, do you believe that you would probably have done it and committed suicide?
I probably would have.
Mm.
But I believe, you know, there's a lot of people that believe different things about God.
Sure.
But, I believe he intervened himself mm-hmm. to prompt me to pray that way. Mm-hmm. And because he had a plan for me.
Right.
And he has a plan for, I believe he has a plan for everybody.
Sure.
But in this particular instance, there was a reason that he did that. Mm-hmm. And a year later, I thought, well, there's a reason he did that, and he's told me, like he's telling me now by giving me this freedom from depression that he wants me to share my story.
Perfect. I can share it with you. I've been in that place many a times. I have thought about it many times. I have found myself locked in a closet, just me, and that's the only place I can go is just dark in a little box, a little dark box mm-hmm. I wanted to be in. It wasn't so, I don't know if I was clinically depressed. It was just overwhelming. The only word I could say is overwhelming. It's just overwhelmed. And many times I have never actually took the step to do it and somebody saved me. A friend of mine did, and he blamed mm-hmm. me for it. He cut his wrist on my on my porch. Both of his wrists, at least, that waited for a guy, you know, and he wanted to make a statement saying, "You left me. I'm going to commit suicide." He cut both his wrists with a razor blade, and he was laid to die. I wasn't even at home at the time. I wasn't at home at the time. He thought I was at home. And then there was a stranger, and he was explained he lived. But he said that it was a stranger who saw him, and he was a spiritual person, and he saved him, and he became born-again Christian. But from then on, he kind of resented me for leaving him and resented me not being there. And he blamed me, saying, "A stranger had to save me, and you were my best friend, and you didn't." So I've been in both ends, so I'm with you. You know, I'm not just interviewing you and saying, okay, this, because like I said in the beginning of the interview, I've been there to the bowels of hell. We don't need a degree to tell us about what clinical disorder we have. We've been there. You write about people like us. You know what I mean? So don't tell us how to cure this. You're the real deal. You're the real deal. You've been in the bowels of hell. You got out of it. This is what we want to know. This is what we need to know. Okay, so I just wanted to tell you that I've been there too.
Indeed.
It's rough, and it's rough, and we all come out of it a certain way. So you call yourself – oh, I'm sorry. You mentioned recovery from addiction. What addiction did you have?
That's a difficult question to answer, but it's – because it's a good one. Now, readers might tell themselves this book is not for me because I don't have an addiction.
Right.
Or I don't have an addiction, so Or I don't have that addiction, so I don't. This book doesn't apply to me. So if I had shared that I had a gambling addiction, that you know, the rest of the world that doesn't have a gambling addiction might have said,
"Sure,
well, this won't work for me." So I didn't share that in the book.
Right.
Because of that, you know, because I can make a list of all the addictions possible. It'll help with all these things. But tomorrow somebody might come up with a new addiction to put on the list, and those people will be excluded. So that's why I haven't shared that in the book, and I don't want to share it with, you know, it's not because I'm afraid of what addiction I have. I did have.
Right.
It's because I don't want to exclude anybody.
Brilliant. I like the way you think, and you're absolutely right. People tend to zoom in on certain things that you're talking about. They're so literate, you know, and they say, well, he's talking about alcohol. He's talking about sex. I don't have any of those addictions.
Yeah.
Maybe I have addiction of being with somebody, and I have this separation anxiety. I like what you're saying. I like what you're doing because it's addiction. That's it. Enough said. Done.
That's right.
Let's work
That's right.
on it. I like that.
And,
okay.
The interesting thing about addiction, going back to the causes, addiction can cause depression, but addiction can be caused by depression as well. So isn't that strange? But it's known by psychologists that happens.
Sure. Sure. It. Well, you call yourself a writer of both fiction and nonfiction. By the way, is this your first book, or you have other books that you have written before?
These two are my first two books.
And by the way, go ahead, Stephen. Go ahead.
I was going to say, as far as I know, they'll probably be the only nonfiction books I write.
Really?
But I don't know yet.
It's hard to write a nonfiction book, especially if you're going through trauma yourself. Did you find that? Did you get triggered when you were writing this book? The joy at the end of the tunnel. Did you get some anxiety? Some kind of triggers?
That's an interesting question. I haven't even I have thought about that sort of thing. I didn't get triggered while writing these two memoirs because I focused on the ideas and the story being in the past that I couldn't control. But it's interesting because I decided to write a novel. It's drafted. I'm pretty much ready to publish it as soon as I can. We're in a guy who's recovered from addiction, dies and goes to heaven in the first chapter, and has a conversation with St. Peter at the gates. You know, using that old joke, you know, about, hey, you know, met Peter at the gates. I retell the story of his life as he's relating it to Peter, and that started to trigger me. I thought, wow, this is crazy. And I wasn't even writing about the same addiction that I had. But I was using some of my experiences as an addict to write some of the chapters in this guy's life. And that was incredibly interesting.
It was. Wow. You're very insightful. And when I hear you, there's very rarely that I talk to somebody when they talk to me from their soul and from their heart. And when you talk, you are talking from a spiritual sense, but you're talking not over people's heads or preaching at people.
No.
You come from the heart, and it's so sincere and it's so pure that it's enlightening. Mm-hmm. Isn't it, Ellen? I mean, it's not a preachy kind of thing. It's like the compassion and the empathy, and I've been there and I got out. Can you feel it?
Ellen's
a heathen. She's a heathen. She's been exercised 3 times and she enjoys the wafers and wine. That's why she goes to church. She's a heathen. Okay, we're going to go back. Okay, but I am serious.
Stephen, can you feel the love between me and Brian?
Very much love.
Sorry.
But
yes.
She's saying, can you feel the love? But but you do talk from your soul, and you do talk from a point of view of empathy, compassion, and understanding. You don't talk over people or at people as judgment, and that comes off very well and very comforting, and it's the biggest compliment I can give you, Mr. Edwards.
It is
true. You're welcome. We're going to go into you call yourself a writer. We already went through that. What kind of fiction do you plan to write? You touched on it a little bit. So you're going to move from this, from the nonfiction, and you're going to get into fiction. So what kind of fiction you plan to write?
Well, I've already started, so it's a fairly easy question to answer. I've drafted, and I'm working on a novel about King David, basically to show just how close to God he really was.
Really?
Using a lot of his psalms to get a feel for how he prayed. That's you know, for me, that was an interesting novel to start on.
Wow.
The second one I've described to you is that one about the addict who went to heaven.
Right.
I got an idea a few months ago to write one about bullfighting, because my dad is from an area of the world called Gibraltar, very close to Spain, and so being so close to Spain, where all the bullfighting is thought to have originated.
Right.
I decided I'm going to write a historical novel about where this all originated from, and explore that whole thing. So it's not necessarily overly spiritual in the way that the other two book novels are. You know, anything can happen. I don't know. Those are just the three of the projects that I have on my mind, but I have a lot of projects on my mind. A lot more.
You know, I haven't read the Bible, to be honest with you, but the conflict between King David and Jesus is a very interesting one. I'm hoping I'm on the right track between those two. Am I correct? Again, I'm a little off on the Bible. Wasn't King David a little jealous of Jesus?
Correct me if I'm wrong. I wouldn't say so because they lived in very different times.
Oh,
some,
see, I don't read the Bible.
By about a thousand years or so earlier than Jesus.
By that much.
Yeah.
I'm only
and,
a thousand years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Jesus.
I'm sorry. Was it Herod? Was it King? Was it? Help me out, seriously. Was it Herod and Jesus? When Jesus, king?
Yeah.
Help me out.
Herod the Great was the one when Jesus was born, he sent out orders to have all the infants killed.
Thank you.
David was known as the human ancestor of Jesus.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that's an interesting tie.
That would be a good one.
So, in the epilogue of David, the David novel, which I titled David the Prophet King, he meets Jesus in heaven after he dies. And that whole conversation is also very interesting.
You got to write it. You already have me hooked.
I did.
I
got to
read
it. I haven't. Yeah. Yeah. See, everybody wants to read it now.
Yeah. And only you could write it, too, because you have that special style.
Thanks.
I hope that you do write it. You're welcome. Tell us more. Tell us your most rewarding experience since publishing your work.
It's been the reviews. I haven't had a review lower than 4 stars.
Wow.
Everybody has had good things to say about the book. The Branch and the Vine. Joy at the End of the Tunnel isn't launched yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially the same book in different words.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't imagine it's going to be any different. But one person said, I had a spiritual experience as a result of reading this book.
Really?
And that just was beyond my expectations.
Wow. Congratulations. That is high praise.
Thank you.
Now that's worth any award. When you make a change in somebody's life, I mean, it's nothing better than that. You can't get any better than that.
No.
You really can. It makes you feel good. Like you're doing God's work, and that's why he saved you, so you can help others. There's a reason.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So did your environment or upbringing play a major role in your writing, and did you use it to your advantage?
It took me years of recovery to figure out what led me to my path, the way down the road of depression and addiction. Basically, it was pain. But that pain, the major part of that pain came from an incident that happened in grade one. We say grade one in Canada, not first grade. But anyway, it's just my habit to keep on saying it that way.
Sure.
The teacher, basically wanted everybody to be able to count to 100 like everybody in grade one should do.
Mm-hmm.
But she wasn't so kind. It was, you had to stand up in the front of the class and count to 100. And if you you missed a number, then you had to sit down right away and start again tomorrow, the next day. The other kids in the class were, jeering at me and making fun, and she didn't stop them. And there were many days when I just didn't want to go back to class after lunch or break. I would spend hours outside doing whatever.
Really?
And I didn't tell my parents about it. In fact, they both asked me when they read the book, they said, how come you didn't tell us about this?
Sure.
And I didn't even have an answer for them.
Did you have so much shame about yourself, the self-loathing that you're even ashamed to even go to your parents or who you were? I mean, how did you develop that as a child that you couldn't even ask for help? I'm using the word shame. If there's another word that you would like to replace it, that's fine.
It happened. It happened so long ago, Brian. I don't even know where I was at with that. All I know is that my self-esteem my self-esteem was very, very low after that.
I remember
after that event.
Right.
I remember fighting with my brother long time ago, right? But mm-hmm. I don't remember fighting with my brother before that time.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you still have some more meditation to go back and reach. You know, I have people on a show, and I say that there's a little boy, there's a little Stephen there, and that he's still being healed. And sometimes you have to go back as an adult, Stephen, and get back to that little boy and just heal that little boy. And there's some things we don't want to look at right now. We're not ready to look at. We may remember, and we do remember, but we decide not to. We choose not to because we're not prepared for the pain yet. And when you when you reach down within yourself and you get that strong inner working, you're going to be able to remember why you fought with your brother. You'll remember why you basically outcasted yourself and the mm-hmm. embarrassment and the shame that you may have had that you can't go to your parents. Something happened there that you didn't think you were worthy, and I don't know what it is, but it sounds like you're on the way to kicking some ass, Stephen. Yes, you are. You're going to be kicking some ass.
My brother and I are very much on good terms right now. So finding out for me really is not as important as maintaining that good relationship. And forgiveness has been one of the biggest healers for me.
Really?
And that recovery into from addiction and also gaining freedom from depression.
Right.
And because holding on to resentments and grudges it's really like I can't think of it any other way, but when it's sort of like taking poison and expecting the other person to die.
Right. And the person holding a grudge is a cancer. It eats you up inside, and it's a slow death. And you can't, I hear what you're saying. I'm just going to tell you something. You're three times better a man than I am. You're three times better than I am. You are. I'm picking
up
a rock and throwing it at people, but you're three times better than I am. Here we go. And we talked about your environment, and how would you describe your writing style? And we'll get into that, you know, because people like to know.
Well, I like to show what's going on rather than tell.
Right.
I like to give an example rather than just say this is how it is. Mm. And I like to use a metaphor where I can. In fact, Joy at the End of the Tunnel is a metaphor that I've used in the second memoir. Whereas The Branch and the Vine, the metaphor there is in John 15, Jesus makes an analogy between people that he's mm-hmm. connected to and himself and God. So mm-hmm. God is the vine dresser, and he is the vine, so we mm-hmm. must stay connected to him in order to bear fruit on our branches. Mm-hmm. So that's where that's how that metaphor works. And mm-hmm. I used it throughout the first book.
Wow!
And in the same, and used a similar kind of metaphor for the thing that we're looking for is that light at the end of the tunnel that's going to bring us the thing that we're looking for, which is freedom from that depression that we're suffering.
Let me ask you a question, and that's a good answer. And you're a God-fearing gentleman. You believe in the Lord, and I'm not going to be disrespectful, but I got to ask the hard questions. It's a curse being me. do you ever blame God? For I understand, Lord, I see the light now, but why must I suffer so much for me to realize the light? Do you ever say that, why must God's children suffer? What is the suffering about for them to see the light or the peacefulness of a spiritual sense? Did you ever question the Lord on that? Why must you suffer so much before you can have the healing heart that you do have?
Yeah, I've heard of a lot of people blaming God for many things.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't ever done that. And mm-hmm. I don't know why that is, because it seems so common these days.
Right.
Even many years ago, it would have been very common for that to happen. But I didn't do that for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
However, what I do know is that, the suffering is it could be the subject of a whole other show. But because there have been people that suffered for many, many generations. In fact, the Bible shows many, many people who suffered many different ways.
Mm.
That is, I believe, because we were given free will.
Mm-hmm.
We were given free will to do whatever we want, mm-hmm. Regardless of what God tells us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of what the government tells us what to do, regardless of what the police says to do, regardless of what your requirements are for this show, I can do whatever I want because I'm me, you know. I have this free will. I have this choice to do whatever I want to do.
Sure.
But because of that, because everybody has that free will,
mm-hmm.
we can very easily cause suffering for somebody else.
Yeah, so especially
then,
if they listen to my show, I cause suffering every day, and I ask God for forgiveness. You're absolutely right.
But you know, I've listened to your show.
Yes,
I've listened to your show, and it's all in good fun. You know, it's all in good fun. People are laughing, and you've had me laughing many times. But you know,
really?
Absolutely. When I listened to Jane's show, it was amazing. I thought it was amazing. Yeah, and several of the other ones that I've listened to, it's not just one.
Wow, thank you,
so,
sir.
Yeah. But you know, because we can all cause harm to one another,
sure.
It perpetuates itself because a lot of people retaliate.
That's true.
Then now we're in a society, and we have been for centuries, mm-hmm. where hurt people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the way that I look at things, loved people can love more people.
Yes. May I ask your profession? I know you're a journalist, but do you have another profession that supports your career path as being a journalist? Because you would make a great clergy. I would go to your church.
Oh,
so I'm being honest. That's why I asked you, because if you're not thinking about going into that area, you might want to think about that, because I think that you could explain the Bible, God's message. And like I said before, you have this gift that you speak from your soul and your heart, and it
mm-hmm.
connects to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just a suggestion. If you haven't thought about it, I'm thinking that might be the calling, because you can help so many people. Just a suggestion, because you'll be a great clergy. I really believe you would be. I really do.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm not a journalist. I'm a jack of all trades.
Author. Okay.
I started my career, your work career, in retail. I moved on to, I worked in many retail stores.
Mm-hmm.
Went to school to do
mm-hmm.
Because I thought it was easy to do. It was.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
Wow.
But it makes a person tired.
Yeah.
In any case, actually I lost the job because of my addiction, while I was still depressed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As I say, jack of all trades. After that, I lost my job as a systems analyst, because of that. I decided I was just going to lay it back and do tech support on the phone.
Right.
Took a hit in pay, but it was fun for the first bit, and then I got tired of that too.
Sure.
And then I lost a job because a company laid me off, mm-hmm. and ended up driving a school bus,
mm-hmm.
which was a lot of fun, but didn't get paid
really?
A lot. Yeah,
I know.
It was a lot of fun.
Wow.
Because kids are kids, you know, and
that's
true. But it's funny, you know. I don't know what it's like in stateside, but I didn't get paid as much as a truck driver would to bring goods to people.
Right.
And those
right.
goods are not as valuable as our kids. So
I hear you.
Then after that, my wife and I decided to do a cleaning business, and
mm-hmm.
That cleaning business ended because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am, you know, I'm bringing it. But, I've been writing since I was in high school. I gave it up because I was depressed and I didn't think it was for me. But when I got this idea to write this book, I knew I had the tools.
You think it nowadays when you do have the tools nowadays, and you really do nowadays, it might be a blessing of this COVID thing, because I really think that if you can develop a program, an online program via Zoom,
mm-hmm.
tell you, and again, I trust you more than anybody with any letters after letters before the name, like, you know, Dr. This and Dr. This
yeah.
and blah, blah, blah. Because again, if you haven't been to the deep bowels of hell, you haven't been
yeah.
there. You can only talk about it or read about it in a book. So what? But think
mm-hmm.
about the Zoom thing, mentoring, and I mean, just giving motivation, speaking, and
yep.
or even what you're talking about here with your book, and you would get a big following.
Mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
you would do good.
Yeah, I thought about it. And I think it's a good idea.
Excuse me, I had a
coffee
fit.
Mm. I hear you. Happens.
I'm sorry. I have a coffee fit. I drink my coffee down the wrong way. And usually just want to ask Ellen to take over. I hope you guys didn't hear that in the interview. I hope
nope.
I muted myself.
Didn't hear a thing.
Thank you.
Didn't hear a thing.
Thank you. Ellen,
but you're a pro.
Ask a question. No, I'm not. I'm just a person who's suffering of attention disorder. But you're so kind to feed my ego. Thank you. Ellen, do you want to ask a question? Because we're at the end of the interview and I can drink a cup of coffee.
No,
and get my
I
voice back.
Listening. I thought it was interesting.
Thank you, Ellen.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
No, it was really interesting. You know,
it is. It's a very, very interesting. Well, Mr. Stephen D. Edwards is a very interesting guy.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Did we go over your writing style? Because I don't know if I got the right answer. If you had to describe your writing style, what would it be?
Well, it's that I like to show what's happening
mm-hmm.
rather than tell. I'd rather give an analogy than to explain a concept than just lay it out, you know, rather than say the door, I don't know, rather than say forgiveness is key, I'd rather
right.
show you how. I'd rather show you how and give you some examples. I'd rather give a metaphor.
Right.
For how something works. And those are powerful things, powerful tools that a writer has. And they make things understood.
Boy, I would love for you to get that program. I would interview you live on Zoom. So many people would be calling the show, talking to you. You would get a huge-ass audience, man. I'm telling you, this might be your forte. I don't want to keep pushing that to you. I'm sure you have your other places to go.
You know
but
what?
I'm just saying, you know.
I'm gonna take you up on it, Brian. I'm gonna do that. And then I'm going to ask you for an interview to do it.
Oh, my pleasure. I mean, my God. I mean, if anybody can do it, if not you, who? Because I'm very sincere. Mm-hmm. And even how you even describe the words in the Bible and this, mm-hmm. I listen to it. Again, it's not a preachy thing. It's when you talk about mm-hmm. it and you explain it. And you explain it in simple terms. Real
yeah.
language. And
yes.
that's what's missing. And I think you have a great talent for that. I really do. We'll move on, though. But if anything I can do, you know, you do that program, you got a show, I am there. You just ask me, and I'm there. I can't promise you I'll
Thanks.
Behave, but I will be there to support you.
You know what? It's mm-hmm. it's that whole attitude that you bring to this conversation
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
makes an aspiring author like myself comfortable to be talking on an interview like this.
Thank you.
It's that is a gift too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I feel you, and sometimes people just need some simple conversation and without judgment and listening. I think that's the lost art, is people don't listen anymore. They're too quick to fix it or judge it.
Yeah.
And I relate to a lot of things you've been through. And what mm-hmm. you're talking about, I really do. Again, you explain it so eloquently and very simple that a moron like me could say, oh, okay, I get it. You know, thank you.
Right.
You don't have to agree with the moron part, but thank you anyway. I understand. Most authors have one specific reason for writing the book. What was yours?
Well, I really wanted people who suffer to stop suffering because it didn't seem easy for me to gain freedom from depression.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was hard. It was very difficult. I had this depression in varying degrees for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I thought at some point I thought it was normal.
Right.
Which is just a crazy idea that it would mm-hmm. that anybody would think this is normal. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want anybody to suffer the way I did for any longer than they have to. So there's a lot of, I mean, as I've told my story to a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
I don't know very many people who suffered for as long as I did and didn't have the drugs or the psychotherapy to
right.
try and recover. And I think in some ways that was, that's God's doing somehow that he brought me out of it at this time so that it was for his glory.
But if he brought you out of it, who brought you to it? And you suffered for so long. You suffered like for years and...
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that maybe this is the point of your life, or that was the point of your life, saying, oh, I hear it. Now I get it, Lord. I get it
mm-hmm.
now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe you were not really understanding the message, or maybe you're not receiving the spiritual help, and that maybe you're
mm-hmm.
at that right time and say, oh, I get it. Is this one of those aha moments, you think? That's why it was so long?
That's a difficult question to answer because I really haven't explored it much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
But I think there was a reason. Obviously, there was
right.
a reason for it
sure.
to be this way.
Sure.
It's very strange to me that I haven't found anybody that suffered the way I did for as long as I did.
Mm.
It's also interesting that
mm-hmm. well,
things just happen this way. I'm
right.
not alone.
I don't,
no,
because
and,
I don't know how you did it, but we do have the same basic suffering. We do
mm-hmm.
have the basic same hills and peaks and valleys that we must overcome. We're still faced with the same
mm-hmm.
demons. I'm talking about people who are suffering severe depression, that people
yes.
who are at the end of the rope and people who are thinking about ending their lives. And I'm saying that's
mm-hmm.
the kind of dirt I share with you. and how one deals with it is how one deals with it. So you're not alone. I just want to let you know.
No, I'm not alone. No,
millions of people, and there's millions and millions of people who are still suffering, counting on you. There's a reason, and you can. And I do believe that you can help a lot of people out of this depression.
Yeah.
And it's not easy to kick. It's not easy to kick.
No. No,
you know,
absolutely not.
A good day. Yeah, a good day can have a very good day. And that 1 minute, something triggers you, and it's like, oh boy. It's not an easy thing to do. But if we can get the tools, we can learn how to deal with it. We can learn how to not really overcome it, but we can learn how to deal with it. That is to a point where it doesn't bring us to the bowels of hell that we can't. And like the Bible says, God doesn't give you, what is it? Help me out, Stephen. God does not give you something to handle. Help me out. I keep messing up that phrase. But
God doesn't give you more than you can handle?
There you go.
Yes.
This is true. Yeah. He's with us.
I just read my devotionals this morning, and Craig Rochelle, who's a pastor of a multi-campus church, says that he takes on a new discipline every year, which is interesting, but he does it that way because he can be disciplined that way. He admitted that he doesn't handle discipline very well.
Right.
And I thought, that's strange. But then when I became a Christian, I just wanted to read as much as I could. And I got tired of it, and I gave it up, and then depression got worse.
Right.
But as I say, what I'm trying to get to is I took on as much as I could.
Right.
And I could handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's God, it's an individual thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Craig couldn't take on more than one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Getting used to it and then taking on another one. Whereas some people can just take everything at once.
True.
So it's very much an individual thing.
Well, maybe we need to suffer to feel how others feel so we can help them. And maybe it's one of the tools we need. We cannot reach out to someone if we don't understand the shoes he walked with. So my thing is, to wake up in the morning, you need a reason. And whether the reason is I got a house, I love my kids, whatever. When you take away the reason, you die.
Yep.
You need that reason, and give me a reason. And that got me out of my killing spree of myself. You know that? Okay, maybe today I'm going to die. But before I die, I got to go to the store because I want to get some. I want to taste those chips for the last. You know, it was this. And then I look around and. You know, it's like, well, you know, that girl's kind of cute. Okay, next Tuesday I'm going to do it, but right now I got this weekend date. You know what I mean? You know?
Yeah.
So you get a reason, and you have a lot of reasons. And the reasons are the challenges, and you must – and that's what life is about always. Every day is – and I have in my mind – and this is my own sickness. This is my own sickness, even. It's like I got to be better than yesterday. Today is better than yesterday. If I had a bad day yesterday, the hell broke open, the devil called my name, he went to my birthday party, and I have to say, well, yesterday was the easy day.
Right.
My challenge today is I'll be better than yesterday. And better than yesterday means I may smile at a stranger and open a door for her as she goes into the store. I did. You know, it could be little simple steps.
Sure.
And it makes you a better person, and I think you're going to be great. Here we go. Now, listen, it's like you're interviewing me, right? And I have to learn how to just listen.
Can I add one more thing?
Sure. Please
do. We've talked about a few tools, forgiveness being one of them. Gratitude is another one, but hope is essential.
Yeah.
Hope is essential. And I think there's hope in my story. Specifically, that I suffered for so long and got freedom from it, from the depression. But they say some people say that you can't live without hope for a week, and some people say you can't live without hope for a day. Like you can't, if you can live without hope for a couple of weeks. Sorry, you can live without food for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and you can live without water and food for maybe a week, maybe a little shorter. But you can't live without hope for 7 hours.
Wow, I like that. See, this is why you should get your Zoom thing. I would be your first. I would be there every day. I like that. See, my experience mm-hmm. is that I had hope, but then I jumped for joy, and hope left me and took half my crap. Okay, just a little. But Ellen likes that kind of stuff. I have to keep her smiling during the interview. But you're right. Without hope, without faith, without joy. But I think you're right. And if you have faith, I think faith comes. What do you think comes first, hope or faith? I think hope, faith, and then you get the joy.
They're sort of intertwined.
Yeah.
Sort of intertwined.
Right. And most authors have one specific reason for writing a book, and I guess your reason is that not only are you sharing the joy, and I want to remind everybody, we are talking with the great Stephen Edwards. That's why I say great with a capital G. That rhymes with God. That means spiritual person. Are you like that, Stephen? Like what I went there? Stephen
awesome.
Edwards. Thank you, Stephen. And the name of the book is called Joy at the End of the Tunnel. And we're getting close to the end of the interview, but he's just an exciting guy. I enjoy talking to Stephen, but I realize I'm on a job and I got to do what I do to sell books.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the reason? I already know your reason, but I'd like to hear you say it for writing the book. And what's the primary reason for you to put out such a good book like this?
Well, I wanted to share my story because as I had shared my testimony in my recovery group, I knew that my story had hope.
Right.
And I wanted to share it to a wider audience. And I wanted to encourage people and to give them some tools to some tools for survival.
Right.
And I wanted them not only to survive, but to thrive and to have some success. Because when you have success, things are huge for you.
Yes. Yes. You can start buying things that doesn't say plain rap. I'm joking,
exactly.
But I know what you're saying.
Exactly.
When you do, it's a whole new world when you reach a different plateau. It's a whole new world. You're like God's little angel warrior. You know, you're like Michael who fell. Mike says, okay, I fell. I'm going to come back up, Lord. Okay, Michael, don't you do that again. So you're like an angel warrior. What is the part of your book you personally like best?
Well, my chapter on gratitude, I think, is the cornerstone of the book. Forgiveness took me a little bit further, like a little bit closer to getting the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But when gratitude came in and really started to, it really sort of started to take over.
Mm-hmm.
And I say in the book that gratitude gave me a gift, put it in an envelope, and that was hope and joy.
Wow. Wow. Nice. Other than selling your book, what do you hope to accomplish with it?
Well, I really look for, you know, lately I've had some one-on-one discussions,
mm-hmm.
such as we're having right now. Not
right.
necessarily on the radio,
sure.
Which have been completely fulfilling, and just giving not only blessing the person that I'm talking to, but blessing me as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those interactions that are really really helpful to have, because without them, I don't have a reason to write anymore.
Wow.
So it's those kinds of things that happen.
Wow. Nice. And who should buy this book? Mr. Edwards, Stephen D. Edwards?
Well, I think libraries should all have at least a copy. I think that anybody who suffers from depression obviously needs to read it. I believe that anybody that knows anybody that suffers from depression needs to read it. And these people come from all walks of life. It could be truck drivers. It could be CEOs.
Right.
We all suffer. We all struggle in the same sorts of ways in different circumstances.
Sure.
So it's those people. It's librarians that need to know about the book so that they can say this one can really help.
Sure.
And so those are the kinds of people that can read it, that can benefit.
And we talk about the unsung heroes that primarily deals with depression and everything, the single moms, the divorcee.
Yes.
People who are having trauma. I mean, the economy.
Thank you.
You know what? The number one depression thing that the whole country is depressed is the pandemic. I mean, the psychological effect for 1 year being locked down, being told that you may die, the psychological effect on that. We haven't even studied this. So 5-10 years from now, we're going to find out the full psychological effect of being locked down for a year and not hugging anybody, touching anybody, seeing your loved one die without saying goodbye, on and on and on. I mean, my God, we are in a depression right now. And a lot of
That's
people
so
are in
true.
Denial, whatever. So I don't know, but this is why they need you, Mr. Edwards. This is why they need you. Other than selling the book, what do you hope to accomplish with it? I think we already went through that as far as helping someone and enlightening someone and getting them through the rough times, giving them the tool. I think I already answered it, but if you want to answer, you have any more answers to that other than selling your book, what do you hope to accomplish with it? There you go, Mr. Edwards. It's all yours.
Well, it's more than money.
Right.
It's more than just making a buck. It's about helping people, and if I can help,
I
can help just one, then everything is good.
I may interrupt here. I just got back from Alaska. I was on a plane. Of course, I was on a plane. Where else would I be? I hope I was on a plane. I was on a plane.
I hope you weren't swimming.
Exactly. It's like, exactly. So I usually don't listen to the flight attendants, you know, and the flight attendants come down and they're talking about safety and the exits. And I go, where's the exit again? Well, sir, they're right over your wing over here. I'm looking at the wing going, that's the first one. But anyway, but she said something interesting on the flight. And I've been listening to this a long time, but then she said it today. I mean, she said it and it hit home. She says, remember, here's how we work the flat jacket, and then you blow here, blah, blah, blah. And remember, make sure that you get the oxygen first and make sure you take care of yourself before you help others. And I thought, wow, that was it. It's like your normal reaction is if I saw an old lady kind of get sucking air, that I would take that mask, give it to her, and I die. And it's like, they want you to be healthy so you can help others. So make sure you take care of yourself first so you can help others. And I say the same thing to authors and musicians. I'm saying, listen, he wants to help. Stephen Edwards wants to help you, but he has to help himself because he has the magic word. Buy his book. You buy his book, he's able to help others because he does have a message. So he got the heart of saying, I want to help everything, but he can't help you if you're not buying his book. He has so many people he can help. So if you really believe in the message, help him to help others by buying the book. And if you don't know the book, you should know the book by now. It is called Joy at the End of the Tunnel by Mr. Stephen, Stephend Edwards. Help him to help others. And by helping him is to buy his book. What is your book going for, Mr. Edwards?
It changes from time to time. I believe on Kobo it's $3.99 US, and I think it's the same price on Amazon.
Right, $3.99. You can't even buy a candy bar for $3.99.
Yeah,
stop it. Yeah, you can't even buy a cup of coffee at Starbucks for $3.99. Stop the nonsense. Support Mr.
Stephen. Well, that's an ebook. Yeah, that's an ebook.
Well,
The paper one is considerably more, but
how much is the paper one?
I think it's around $14.99. It's
$14.99. That's even better. We're talking about tools of a lifetime. We're talking about an investment in mental illness. That's what we're talking about here. Depression does not go away, but you do need the tools to fight it. I don't know if you can ever cure depression. We're always fighting it because we have to sometimes get out of our own head, and that's really hard to get out of our own way or to get out of our own head. And if we're still in our head telling us these triggers, we're going to always certain things are going to trigger us, but we need the tools to say, okay, stop it. Okay, I see what's going on. I'm going to breathe deeply. Here's how we handle it. And we move on. But if you don't have those mechanics, it could only get worse. And for an investment of $14.95, whatever the book is, and if you don't have $14.95, $3.99, my God, people, invest in your own mental health. Because if you don't invest in your mental health, guess what? We don't care. That's not his words. That's not Stephen's words. These are my words. If you're not smart enough to invest in your own mental health, why should I invest in you? These are my words, not Mr. Stephen Edwards. And I right. believe that. I really do believe that. You know?
I priced it low for a reason.
Right.
Because they say sometimes no one will listen to you until you care.
Right. Hey, I like that. I had a book, Mr. Edwards, I priced it very low, and the homeless people are using it for toilet paper. I have helped a homeless person right to the ass today. I have moved society forward. Mr. Edwards, it's been a pleasure. Before you leave, I'm going to give you 30 seconds, and something that if we didn't touch on or something you need to say during this interview, you have the 30 seconds, and I want to thank you again. It's been a joy having you on the air. Please mention your website in that 30-second period and how people can reach you. And Ellen, this is the end of the interview. Do you have one question at all for Mr. Stephen Edwards?
No. I was just listening, and it was all kind of very interesting.
That's right. It is interesting. Ellen takes a bath in holy water each day, hoping that she'd be a better person. It doesn't work. She's a heathen. Okay.
Maybe it comes from my book that I write.
No, we're not talking about your erotic book with Mr. Edwards. How dare you? You see what I mean, Mr. Edwards? It's inappropriate. Inappropriate. He may read it, but he's not going to confess to it right now. He will heal you, Ellen. He will. Mr. Edwards, 30 seconds. Take it away. Don't forget to mention your
name. Well, all right. All right. My name is Stephen D. Edwards. I'm the author of two memoirs about depression. And I would like you to consider, if you are a Christian, to get the branch and the vine, how Jesus gave me freedom from depression. I give you some tools of how to get that freedom from depression. I discuss some causes, but the important thing is the tools and getting the freedom. Joy at the End of the Tunnel is written for non-Christians, written in a secular way. My website is stephendedwards.net, and thank you for listening.
You're welcome. And before you go, Mr. Edwards, we have one final question that all of our guests, I have to ask them. Mm-hmm. If you go back in school, you are Stephen Edwards now, the age you are, this interview now. But if you had to go back in time when you were 15 years old, you're in school right now, you're at that desk, and you had to whisper to your young self right now, And tell him one thing. Don't answer it yet because I got to go for a break. What would you tell yourself at 15? All the knowledge you know now, everything that you went through, you go back in time and you see yourself at 15 years old. You have one thing to say to that young Mr. Edwards. What would you say? And we'll be right back. And Ellen's going to talk to you just in case of anything. And when we come back, Mr. Edwards will answer. What would he say to his self at 17 years old? I like to hear it. You're listening to Brian Hammer Jackson along with Ellen J., the fantastic, famous, soon to be famous, but he is famous, believe me, Stephen D. Edwards. The name of the book is called Joy at the End of the Tunnel. I want to know what he would whisper to his young self at 15 right now in school. One piece of advice, and we'll be right back. And I'm going to connect Mr. Edwards to Ellen Johnson, just in case we miss anything before we go off the air. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. Here we go, connecting you two. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Brian Hammer Jackson on Hammer Radio Network. And what song should I play? Really short song. Oh, here we go. It's going to be short. We'll be right back. Hello, there we go. We are back with Brian Hammer Jackson, executive producer, Ellen J., and our distinguished guest, Mr. Stephen D. Edwards. The name of the book, Joy at the End of the Tunnel. Here you go, Mr. Edwards. I would like to know what advice you would give young Stephen Edwards. He's sitting at a desk right now. He's 15 years old. He's in school. It's a Tuesday, and you're going to give him one piece of advice. What would you say to him?
Well, I remember when I was 15 years old, I thought I had it all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, Stephen, you do not have it all figured out. You have a lot to learn. You have a lot of good things coming to you. And there is hope.
I like that. There you go. Everybody support Mr. Stephen D. Edwards, people. Joy at the End of the Tunnel. Thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And we'll be right back. We're going to talk about things like politics, and we're going to talk about things like what's going on in the world. I am Brian Hammer Jackson. That is Mr. Stephen D. Edwards, everybody. Joy at the End of the Tunnel. And that is Miss Ellen J. We'll be right back with some more topics today. We heard that a friend of ours was on a show and he's going crazy. So what we're going to do is we're going to help. I mean, Stephen brought the joy to me. I got that little help kind of thing. And today I feel like I want to help somebody. So what we're going to do is call Bellevue and commit him. Let's see if that works. Live on the air. Oh, this
sounds
is where
good.
You leave. Yeah, Stephen is like, I want no part of this. Brian's going to commit somebody. Mr. Stephen Edwards, thank you so much again. And we'll be right back with more Brian the Hammer Jackson and Ellen J in the morning. All right, everybody, here we go. Look at that.
Awesome.
Thank you, sir. This is the show where everybody knows your name. Listen to this. I'm going to mute everybody, and we'll be right back.
Got no light, the check is in the mail, and your little angel hung the cat up by its tail, and your third fiance didn't show. Sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name. Everybody knows your name. Roll out of bed, Mr. Coffee's dead. The morning's looking bright. And your shrink ran off to Europe and didn't even write. And your husband wants to be a girl. Be glad there's one place in the world where everybody knows your name.
That's right. That's the kind of show we have. We're glad that you came, and we're glad that you're listening, and we're really glad that you're supporting us around the world. And I see you. I see you, India. Yes, I do. I see you, Switzerland. Hey, buongiorno. I'm going to learn to speak each language so I can talk to our people in different countries. I've learned it. Buongiorno. Yes, I see you. I see you, Alfredo. Yeah, be like that guy on the TV. I see you. Oh, I see the Indian people. Ah, curry to you, too. And our friends from Britain. I got to talk to them. Good day, mate. No, that's Australia, right?
That's
okay.
Australia.
Ah.
See,
good day, mate.
How do you talk to the people,
you to people from Britain? What do you say to them? Don't they say mate in Britain? I don't
no.
know what they say.
No.
What do they say? What do they say?
I don't know.
How do you greet people? I don't know. You know, the British, they don't care. All right. And I want to talk to my friends in Africa, and I will speak the language. Abutu daptu da.
No.
That means.
Don't.
Well, I speak African. Hey, you. You. Listen, you.
It's not African.
It's not? I'm reading the wrong book.
Swahili or something. It's Swahili
yeah.
or something.
All right, and our friends in Hawaii, great ratings in Hawaii. Aloha, ha, 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 our friends in Hawaii. We are so international, and our friend in Japan, we only got like 3% people in Japan. Maybe I got to do the Google language thing and talk to my friends in Hawaii. Arigato! I think I said hello or let's start up and rise and do a revolution and take over the government. Either way, I said hello. Thank you, my friends in Japan. You know,
don't you want to talk to little Kim in Korea?
One of the shows, and this is true, I've been on air for a while, and I didn't think anybody was listening to me because I don't even listen to me when I talk. Who listens to me? And I got a letter. When I say I got a letter, it was a long letter, and I thought it was spam because it came from South Korea. I go, okay, no, I'm not going to buy, you know, tech support or whatever. And I was really surprised, and it's true, and this warmed my heart, and this happened 7 years ago, and it still warms my heart. And it was from a captain in the Army in South Korea. And he was just saying that he listens to the show. And he was saying that he laughs and he enjoys the show very much. And it was a nice little email, you know what I mean? I'm saying I'm reaching a guy from South Korea who's our ally. From South Korea. I hope it was South Korea. It could have been North Korea. Who knows? It's a toss-up. Well, I just want to say hello, little Kim. Kim Jong. Love you lots. Just in case, I'm covering my bases. But it was really nice to have a letter from South Korea, a captain from South Korea. It touched my soul. And we do have the lovely Latia here. Latia, good morning, darling.
Isn't Stephen Edwards still here? I think Mr.
Yes,
Stephen Edwards.
The great Stephen D. Edwards is here. Good morning, Liz.
I am.
Hello, baby. I'm starting my fan base young. Hello, baby. I'm going to give him a little T-shirt called the Hammerhead. Hello, you little Hammerhead.
But you have to remember, Brian, those children right there were not the first child that you...
Yeah, I know. The kids love me, and then they learn to hate me. I don't know what happened.
What was it that Erin said she was going to do?
She was going to run over me on her with her daddy's truck. So beautiful.
No, she's going to run you over with her daddy's car.
That's it. Such a beautiful child. Whatever happened to her? Oh, she's going to LSU. Oh, who knew? You know,
to have Stephen,
that's true, to have Stephen, and I'm really blessed that he's here, and if you really, sometimes it's really depressing, and I try to stay off of Facebook, I try to stay off the fray, and when I do look at it, it's kind of depressing, because if you stay there long enough, somebody's sick, somebody's ill, somebody lost someone. Somebody's getting divorced. It's life. You know what I mean? I mean, I happen to get those feeds. You know, I don't get a feed like, "Hey, good morning, Brian. How are you?" It's like, "Oh God, Grandma just died. Oh shit." And then I'm singing the hand prayers and everything. But I talk about it, and because it's part of life. And when we talk about depression, and we don't talk about mental illness as much, and we still have this bad thing about mental illness, something's wrong with you. Oh yeah, something's wrong with me and something's wrong with you too. But we don't talk and own it. It's still a kind of shame kind of thing, and it's still kind of an obscure secret thing, and I think in depression, believe it or not, if you look at mental illness, you will see depression in that kind of category. And like I said, it affects people in different ways. And sometimes in your life, you will face challenges and you will get depressed. It's part of life. What you do with, I used to say on the show, and I used to ask the question, what is the difference between a coward and a hero? There's no difference, but what that person does makes him either or. But they're the same person, and what you do will put you in a category, and how you handle depression or bipolar or OCD or whatever you want to call it that, what you do with it will determine your fate. And I'm not a clinical psychiatrist and I'm not any of this, but sometimes when I talk to Stephen and when you've been there, and not many people been there can go that deep. And to rise from it, and if you do go that deep, not many people can pull out of it. And you'd be surprised the stats. And with this pandemic, you'd be surprised at the number of suicide that's going up with the teenagers and deaths of suicide with this pandemic. And I do believe in 4 years and 5 years, when they actually study the people who are shut down for a year and who are ostracized, and I say this without hugging a human being or seeing a human being come toward you, you're thinking that they're going to kill you. There's a lot of psychological effects on that, and we haven't really dealt with that yet. You know, and we will. So what you do when you're faced with something will determine what kind of character and who you are. And it's so easy to quit, man. It is so easy to quit. It is so easy, man. And sometimes quitting, and you're thinking quitting is going to relieve the pain, and quitting is going to do this, and quitting is like, I give everything. And I happen to, and this is my own opinion, I happen to believe it's unfair, my own opinion, to give it to the Lord, because the Lord gave you the common sense, the strength. Yes, the Lord is there to back you up. Yes, the Lord is there with you at all times. But the Lord put you on this earth for a reason, and he gave you those tools. And to not use the tools that the Lord gave you, it's kind of, in my opinion, this is just Brian Hammer Jackson's opinion, is a sin. You're here. We're here for a reason. And we have to figure out what that reason is. And we will have obstacles. And the obstacles that come into our life are not obstacles. They are challenges that make us a better person, that we can help other people who have not reached that obstacle yet. So we must face these obstacles, and we must face the depressions, and we must face the demons that we all have, because we all have them. It's part of life. And when we do face our demons, we become a better person to help others. And I mean, sometimes we succumb to the demons, and we can succumb to the alcoholism, and we can succumb to the drugs or the sex addiction, and we will do bad things. We are human beings. We are flawed. We will do bad things. We will hit our brother over the head with a baseball bat when he's sleeping. Okay, I did. It was a plastic bat. It wasn't a real bat. Well, he was sleeping. But we will do things. But recognize the fact that we can do good things too, and we're not bad. Sometimes good people do bad things, and I don't think we emphasize that enough, because you could do a bad thing, but good people can do bad things. And what makes you good is because we can correct those things and make ourselves a better person, and I don't mean to preach. So that takes me to a point here where I'm not for everybody. I love my audience and people who love me. I always get surprised because I am off the wall. And I do enjoy hearing that. But once in a while, people get mad and they do bad things and they say bad things about me. But then I recognize there's some people that need a little help. And I have done all I can to help them. And there's a person on the show. His name is Cole Blackwell. If you hear any interviews, whoa, boy, does this guy, he needs help. And I just want to say, God's last name is not damn it, so quit using that word. That's not his last name. So I'm going to commit him. I'm going to get this. He lives in New York. I am calling Bellevue to see if I could fill out some paperwork to commit him. He doesn't know I'm going to commit him. I can't commit him. I'm not a relative. But the information that I'm going to do is, like, if you do have a loved one and you're thinking about committing them, maybe the information that I can do live on this air can give you some information about whether you should commit your grandmother or somebody who's can't fend for themselves, or then you have that crazy uncle who's running around not taking his medication. And maybe you're thinking, you know, does my parents have to commit him? Do I have the power of attorney to commit him? And what are the rules? So part of it is not a prank so much, but maybe there's information in that humor. That's why we do it. So we're going to try to commit Cole Blackwell to Bellevue. Ellen's usually with me, meaning that she has full studio. She doesn't have the full studio this time. Her computer is getting situated. And before we commit Cole Blackwell, we usually bet on the show. And I go with Ellen, how far, because Bellevue, believe it or not, I try to commit myself 6 times and they won't take me. I had it live on the air. How many times did I try to commit myself? How many?
15 times. And you were too crazy even for Bellevue.
They wouldn't even take me. I know. Sorry. One time
yeah,
I said I was
tell,
a chicken.
Tell him about the time that you tried to commit your son because he was running around acting like a chicken.
Yeah, I tried to commit my son because he had this disorder that he didn't. He was far from reality, and he was a chicken. And they were listening to me, and they go, "Well, do you want to bring him in?" I said, "I'm kind of undecided because we really need the eggs." They go, "Sorry," and I was saying it straight face that would bypass them, and they go, "What?" So I'm going to do the same thing with Cole Blackwell.
Yeah, at the time that you called him up asking him what the entertainment was for that night. And you said
yeah,
you
I wanted
the
West Wing. I wanted the West Wing and the mint on my pillow.
Yeah.
And they said, sir, this is not a resort. Yeah. So as you can tell, I bothered Bellevue, and Bellevue has enough of me. One time they told me, okay, you sound like you're sick. Why don't you take a bus? I go, you want me to take a bus? Yeah, I'll take a bus. We're not going to pick you up. So that's how our conversations with Bellevue go. So I'm going to do this live on the air. I don't know the answer. I don't have the script. I'm going to call Bellevue, which is a mental home in New York. Cole Blackwell is in New York. I'm trying to find out if I can commit somebody to a mental institution. That's the goal. And let's see the information we can get. Let's see if it works. What do you think, Ellen? Should we go for it? So I don't.
Sure.
So what
help.
I'm going to do
he
is
need, he needs major help.
Yeah, he does. Me, you know, I wonder. You know, do they have a Groupon and how are the rooms? How much? You know,
Groupon.
How much time do I need to book it? While I do this, Ellen, you've been with me for 10 years. So you've been my executive producer. You've been an on-air personality. So I'm gonna let you take over the show because I have to look for Bellevue. Look for the number. I have my headphones
look,
on, so
I can
call
I can,
them.
I can look for the number. I
can
do
it
on my
it?
Phone.
Okay.
Yeah, I can still do it on my phone, and I'll text it to you.
I'm going to put it in my Facebook email or my Facebook DM. Whatever. Oh, you're going to text it to me. Okay, that'd be cool.
Yeah,
that'd
I can text it to you.
Okay, so Ellen's going to give me the number, and we're going to call Bellevue Live and try to commit one of our listeners. I think it's a fair thing to do. Need a little help. And I don't know what to say, but he will have a problem that Bellevue's going to go, And again, if you're worried about it, Cole Blackwell is not his real name, so don't worry about it. There's no personal information going in. There's no such thing as Cole Blackwell. That's his stage name or whatever. We're not committing a real person, but a name, a pseudonym of a name, you know. So don't worry about it. I know you would. So Ellen's going to give me the number. And meanwhile, again, don't forget to get the book while Ellen looks for the number.
Brian?
Oh, just about to ask what happened.
Wait a minute. Can you hear me now? Uh-oh.
Yeah, we
Latia, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Latia, maybe I hit the wrong button. I'm sorry. I might have hit my mute button. And Ellen's back. Latia, have you, as a young lady, have you gone through a depression period do you know of?
Have I ever been depressed? What you saying?
Depressed, yeah. Have you ever been depressed?
Yeah.
Have it gotten it stronger since you gave birth and since you do, now you have full responsibility of 2 human lives, do you feel that depression is a little stronger than normal? And what do you do to keep yourself up, to not go into that dark place? What do you do?
I don't do nothing.
Okay. But does it work for you? I mean, does it, when you say you don't do nothing, after a while, does it, you know, you just turn your attention to something else and you get out of that funk? and you just move on?
No, not really.
Do you really?
I don't show it.
You don't feel it. So, you know, I do the same thing sometimes.
No, I don't feel like I put on the phone.
Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. What makes you happy, Latia? If you had to name three things that really makes you happy, what makes you happy? Just the top three.
Seeing my baby's happy.
Right.
What will make me happy is to actually be financially free, and to actually, you know, just to, you know, see my babies enjoy life. That's it.
Right. But I understand that. But, you know, it's funny, when you're a mom, things change. And we forget about ourselves. I understand the babies, but – and then we live for our babies and we live for this. But you, if you were just selfish and narcissistic, what would make you happy? The top thing, just you.
Giving my money to myself.
Giving your money to your what? I'm sorry?
Keeping my money to myself.
Right.
What else?
And what would you do with it?
Go on vacation.
Where would you go?
To an island somewhere.
What island?
Probably Costa Rica or Bahamas, Hawaii, somewhere.
Really? Wow. And why would you go to an island and not Manhattan or California or Montana? Why an island?
Because I'll be able to, you know, enjoy myself and be away.
Is there something you're running away from that you just need to get the hell out of Dodge? It's just a hustle, bustle, the pressure?
Just be gone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that sounds good. Ellen's back. Ellen, do you have the number?
Yeah, in your text message.
Okay, no, and actually, I have it right here. All you have to do is tell me. What do you got? What's the number? I can write it down.
Okay, hold on. Let me go back to
okay.
Text message.
Okay.
It is 212-562-4141.
4141. I got 212-562-4141. Is that the number?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're going to make a live call to Bellevue, which is a mental hospital in New York City. I think in New York area. We're going to commit one of our callers. He needs a little help. Now, it's a light call. It sounds like it's a joking thing, but in between my joking, I am going to try to get some information because somebody out there may be thinking about committing somebody. And I'm going to ask them, is it possible that I could commit somebody? They'll tell me how I can do it and fill out forms and everything. And hopefully we'll commit Cole. Cole doesn't know we're committing him until he gets a knock on the door with the people with the white suit and a neck.
Unless he's listening.
Unless he's listening, I know. Which he probably is. So during the call, what I'm going to do is mute everybody because I have no idea what I'm going to say. Ellen's going to do the disclaimer like she used to do when I do live calls. And after she makes a disclaimer, I will mute you because of the background noise and because that's how it is. And then I would dial. So, Ellen, please do the disclaimer.
Yeah. You never know how these calls are going to go. Okay, these calls are completely fly by the seat of your pants. They could go so good or they could go so wrong so fast.
Yeah.
That's my disclaimer. You never know what's going to happen because Brian has no idea of what he's going to say until they pick up the phone. And sometimes, even after they pick up the phone, he still has no idea what he's going to say.
I have no idea.
So,
the last call we made, well, we made two calls before that. But one of my favorite calls is that, you know how they do these week things and they celebrate this stuff like Happy Secretary Day or it's love,
yeah.
It's love day. Well, we did a call was it was an obscure day, I swear to God. It was something like Happy Orgasm Day. They actually had a day. It was Happy Orgasm Day. They actually had that day.
Yeah.
So what I decided to do is I called a nunnery. Ellen, were you with me when the Boston Nun was on the air? Remember,
yes,
were you there?
Yes, I was.
You were. So we decided to call. Was it a convent
you
that
called
we called
convent.
And wish him a happy
yes.
orgasm
you
day?
Call,
was
yes,
it?
You called a convent.
We called him live. This woman, this nun was such a beautiful lady. It was just, she put a smile on my face, and it was a Bostonian accent. Irish as can be. Can't get any more Irish than her. I call. She picks up the phone, and I did qualify her as a nun. She is a nun. And then I said, well, happy orgasm day. And she goes, oh, dear, thank you. I was not expecting that answer from the nun.
No, no. You have to finish what you told her, what you asked her. You asked her how she was going to celebrate.
Yes, I did. How are you going to celebrate orgasm day? She goes, oh, dear. What did she say? She was so cute.
She goes, we're going to have some dinner, and we're going to eat a lot of food.
A lot of food. Yeah, that's just it. We're going to have a great dinner, eat some food. I go, great. You know, but she was just so... She was precious, man, with a heavy Irish accent and everything. And it was fun, you know. And we're not going to tell you when Jesus called. We're not going to say what happens when we had a thing where a lot of people, and I hope Mr. Edwards doesn't get offended. So we had a thing where a lot of people were waiting for Jesus to come back. And I said this on a show a lot of times. It's one of my favorite calls. And it says, if people truly believe that Jesus will come back, will they actually believe it, or is that just a thing? So call this segment, if Jesus calls, will you answer? Ellen takes it from here, and we made live call to people. As Jesus was here, and Jesus made a collect call to you, what would you do? And Ellen, go ahead and tell what happened.
Yeah, well, the first two people that we called, they weren't having it. So they said, no, I was the operator. And I said, ma'am, this is the collect operator. Will you accept the collect call from Jesus? And the guy goes, no. And then
what?
We made another call. And I did, and it was a woman. So I did the same thing. Ma'am, this is the long distance operator. Will you accept the collect call from Jesus? And she goes, no, thank you. And she hung up. Third call. It was a little old lady that answered the phone, and
I said, ma'am.
And
see, wait, before you do it, I was not expecting anybody to seriously take the call. I'm listening to no, so I can do a bit saying, see, you don't believe, if Jesus was here, you wouldn't even take a call. So that was the bit. You would not take a collect call from Jesus. Jesus was here, and you're supposed to be a God. But I was not prepared for anybody to actually pick up. I was not prepared at all. So this is what happened. Go ahead, Ellen.
And I go, ma'am, this is the long-distance operator. Will you accept the collect call from Jesus? And she goes, why, yes, young lady, I will accept the collect call from Jesus. And I said, okay, ma'am, thank you. Hold for Jesus. And then I waited.
I had nothing.
I had nothing. And after about 2 minutes of waiting to Brian, and I said, yo, Jesus, you're on.
Yeah, exactly. But the call went well.
Yeah.
You know. I know, Mr. Edward.
Oh my God,
I know.
Steven is still here. Oh my God. Yes.
I know.
I'm still here.
He's so disappointed in you that even be encouraged.
I'm not. I'm not. I'm trying to have two conversations at once.
The call went well, though. The call went well. I blessed her and
yes.
hung up.
Yeah. Okay, we're not going to go into what you told the lady, Brian.
All right. Okay. So we're going to make the call. So that's a setup. No, I said nice things. I didn't say anything evil.
No, you did say nice things, but it was kind of funny. Okay.
Yeah.
She said that she wore you around her neck every day, and you told her that you were going to send her a new necklace because that was your bad side.
Yeah. Yeah. It went well. She did accept the call from Jesus. She did. She was again, was really nice. All right. I'm going to mute everybody. Here we go. I'm going to make a call to see if we can commit Mr. Cole Blackwell. We're calling Bellevue. Here we go.
Thank you for calling Bellevue Hospital Center. Please press 1 for English, 2 for Spanish, 3 for Mandarin.
Hold on.
Are you still there?
Thank you for calling Bellevue Hospital Center. Please press 1 for English, 2 for Spanish, 3 for Mandarin.
I passed 1. Did it register?
Are you still there?
Thank you for calling Bellevue Hospital Center. Please press 1 for English, 2 for Spanish, 3 for Mandarin.
I'm pressing it. How come I'm not getting it?
All of our agents are taking care of other customers. Please stay on the line. The next available agent will be with you shortly.
Okay, they're going to roll this over. Like Ellen said, I have no idea what I'm going to say. We're calling Bellevue.
New York City Health and Hospitals, we are here for you.
We're going to try to commit Cole Blackwell for mental illness and behaving strangely. And we're going to see how it goes. Again, I want to thank Mr. Edwards.
Stephen
D. Edwards, the name of the book, again, it is called Joy at the End of the Tunnel, and it touches on depression, and it talks on addiction, and it's really a good book. Go to Amazon, get the book right now. Invest in your own mental health by buying his book.
All visitors must be 18 years or older.
Here we go. Usually when we have music like this, I usually do a commercial and I use their music. Wait a minute, I understand this. See. Okay. Usually when I hear music like this, while we're waiting, I usually do a commercial and I steal their music.
If you are calling to place an outside call, please press 1. You will be prompted to leave your name, extension, and the number you want.
No, I want to talk to somebody. Okay.
New York City Health and Hospitals.
They're rolling this
over. Leader in COVID-19.
There's probably a lot of crazies out there. Well, hold on the line.
If you are calling to place an outside call, please press 1. You will be prompted to leave your name, extension, and the number you want dialed, and the operator will call you back. Please speak slowly and clearly so that your information can be properly recorded. If you want to reach the TMIS Interpreter Services, please press 2. If you want to be connected to other departments, please press 3. If you want to speak with a Bellevue operator, please press 0.
0.
Are you still there? Thank you for calling the Bellevue operator. If you are calling to place an outside call, please press 1. You will be prompted to leave your name, extension, and the number you want dialed, and the operator will call you back. Please speak slowly and clearly so that your information can be properly recorded. If you want to reach the TMIS Interpreter Services, please press 2. If you want to be connected to other departments, please press 3. If you want to speak with a Bellevue operator, please press 0.
In all 5 boroughs, you must make an appointment to schedule your vaccination. For more information, please visit NYC Health and Hospitals.
If you are calling to place an outside call, please press 1. You will be prompted to leave your name, extension, and the number you...
For more information, please visit nychealthandhospitals.org/COVID-vaccine.
If you are calling to place an outside call, please press 1. You will be prompted to leave your name, extension, and the number you...
Debe hacer una cita para programar su vacunación. Para obtener más información, visite nychealthandhospitals.org/COVID-vaccine.
Thank you for calling the Bellevue operator.
If you are
calling to place an outside call, please press 1. You will be prompted to leave your name, extension, and the number you...
To further...
Ellen, am I on the air? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Hello? Hello, Bellevue? Oh.
Yes, I'm here.
Did I reach Bellevue?
Yes, this is Bellevue. What do you need?
okay, what I need, ma'am, is I have a problem with my brother, and I think he's showing signs of mental illness, and I'd like to talk to somebody to see if I could commit him to the hospital.
Let me connect you to the psychiatric emergency room.
Thank you, ma'am. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me? I'm sorry, I can barely hear you. Do we have a good connection?
I can hear you. How can I help you?
Okay. Ma'am, I'd like some information. I have a brother who's mentally unstable. I mean, he's acting really strange. He hasn't been on his medication. He goes down the street like he has Tourette's, and then he starts barking like a dog. And at one point, he did bite the mailman, and we have to now get the mail from the post office, and we're thinking about putting them down. But we have our hands tied, and I'd like to know, can I commit my brother to one of the wards and get some help?
Well, you would have to bring him into the emergency room. He has to be evaluated by one of the physicians first, and then they make that decision if the patient needs long-term care.
I'm thinking about calling law enforcement. Would that help me to get him on a, what do they call it, a 5150? He hasn't hurt anybody. We're just afraid that he may hurt himself. And the problem of it is when we eat at the table, we have to make sure he's in his high chair. And if he does, and he throws his food and everything, and if he doesn't eat well, we send him in a corner. And it's kind of embarrassing because he's 58 years old. And we just can't handle them anymore, and I'm wondering, should I just call the police and have them just do a – and I don't want to do that because I don't want him to have a record. So that's why I'm calling you directly. Can you advise me on how I can commit my brother, Cole Blackwell?
Calling the police, if you're trying to get him help, that's definitely not the way to go.
So right.
So you only have two options. You can either bring him in.
Right.
You can bring him to the emergency room yourself, which we're here 24 hours a day. Or you can call 911 and you can have the EMS pick him up. But what you would need to do when the EMS person asks you questions, you have to let them know that you may need an escort, meaning that they would have the NYPD escort the ambulance to bring the patient to the hospital. It doesn't mean he's being arrested. It just means that they may need a little bit more assistance in getting him to the hospital if you guys can't bring him in yourself.
Oh, I see. Okay. And now, but if I can just trick him to bring him in, do I have the authority, even though we're family, he's my brother, do I have the authority to commit him?
You can bring him to the ER.
Right.
And it will be helpful if you do bring him in and you come along with him because you knows what's going on. Because most of the time when patients come, they don't tell everything. But at least a family member who knows what's going on is more helpful for the doctor because they may not tell the doctor everything. So it would be helpful if a family member can come who knows what's going on to give the doctor more insight on what's going on that the patient won't say.
Okay. Now, we're not insured, and he's not insured. Would there be a problem with Okay. Okay. All right. I will try to convince him to go. If he doesn't want to go, then I will take your advice to call the police department and tell them the situation.
You call 911, and you're going to have to explain the situation to the operator.
Oh, 911.
Then they will generate to the police to come as well.
Right. I mean, because this is scary. It's getting out of hand. I know you're helping a lot of people. We just don't know what to do. I mean, we think he's acting like a dog and everything, and it's just, well, like I said, we're going to put him down. I mean, we just had it with this guy. I will call 911, ma'am. I will talk to the appropriate authority, and hopefully we can get him. And once he's committed, is he going to get in a straight? I mean, the horror stories I hear: straight jacket, rubber room.
We don't do straight jackets. We don't do that.
I was getting ready to say he's a size 17 and he probably fit, you know.
No, we don't do that.
Okay. Okay. All right, ma'am.
If you bring him, the doctors would explain everything to you.
Okay. All right. Hey, you've been a great help, and thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Hey, thank you. I'll be seeing you soon. Okay. Okie dokie.
All right. Brian, are you there? Hello? Brian?
And that's how we do a live call. There you go. So that's how it is. So at least we got some information if somebody's suffering with this. And I actually use Cole Blackwell, who thinks he's a dog, and he bit somebody. There you go, Ellen. We have completed the call to commit one of our callers. I told him I'm going to put him down. Bad doggy. I'm going to hit him over the head with a newspaper. Doesn't work. We will look back on this show, Ellen, in about 6 or 7 months ago. Remember when we made a mental health call and committed Cole? Just that title is going to make us laugh. Yeah, we tried to commit him. Wow. All right, grade me on the call. What's my review, Ellen? What did I get?
I gave you a 10.
You gave me a 10?
Call.
Wow,
yeah.
Look at that.
You made it. Well, you did it all the way through.
I did make it through, right? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Latia, on a scale of 1 to 10, how did the call go as far as entertainment purposes and information purposes? What do I get?
You got a 10.
Wow. Yeah. And, of course, our celebrity guest, the one and only Mr. Stephen D. Edwards. Mr. Stephen, entertainment value as far as informational value, what do you give me?
Entertainment, 11.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow.
Information-wise,
yep.
11.
Wow. By my adding, I think I got a 32. Look at that. There you go. And again, sort of a call was about entertainment, but a lot of it is if somebody asks, if you're in that situation and you are wondering, do you have the authority? And we found out this, do not call the police department. We found this out. And the reason that's so important is because we have had incidents this year where the police have arrived and the person was acting irregularly and sometimes violent, and he got shot. There's been 3 cases that I know of that the person had some kind of form of bipolar or some kind of form of suffering mental illness attack, and a cop actually shot him. He was not fully aware that they're going on a call. So what we learn here is don't call the police. Call 911. If you have a loved one that is suffering to some kind of form of mental illness and you don't know what to do and you think he's going to hurt himself, call 911, not the police department. Explain what's going on, and the EMS guys will come and get him with a big net and hopefully a cookie. There you go. There you go. I want to thank everybody.
It's some cities that actually have mental health police. I've seen it on YouTube. Like, every time they get a mental health call, they call the mental health department and the police department. They need that everywhere because some police is like, I think it happened in New Jersey or Louisiana. A lady was calling the ambulance on her son, but the police came and they ended up shooting her son. And he is a black male.
Right.
They killed him right in front of her.
Right. I have seen that. I have seen more than one, Latia. I have seen it. And the people who called would be the mother or the aunt or the grandmother or whatever. And the next thing you know, can you imagine they have to live with that? That you're actually calling to give your son or whoever some help, and then they come up and they just shoot you dead.
Yeah.
Can you imagine living with that?
I should have never called.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you guys listen to me. 911 EMS. It can save his life, her life, your life, somebody's life. I wish somebody would call the mental health on me when I was a kid. I mean, I was a weird-ass kid. I was a strange kid. But I was a good kid, but strange and different. But I decided,
Hello?
Can you hear me now? I'm sorry. But when you get in trouble in that school, they shame you. So you had it at recess, they put you by a pole, and that's the punishing pole. All the kids at recess can see who was a bad kid. That's what they used to do in our school. Did something wrong. I was by the pole. Everybody's pointing at me. And I said, okay, I had enough of you guys. I'm going to run for president. That's how my thinking was. And I said, first I'm going to test my theory. I was in all my class was white. I said, I'm going to run for class president. I got voted in. I was the president. I said, okay. Then they had an election for school president. Guess what? I won. I go, wow, who would vote for me? And I thought that would be the end of my troubles, but then I got acted up, and they put the president – I feel like Donald Trump. They put me right back at the poll again. I go, wait a minute, I'm the president of the school. Fake news. Free persecuted. I didn't change my behavior. I wanted the title for power. I feel like Donald Trump, you know. I went into the search to school. Come on, everybody, follow me. I was the first impeached president at 8. I had no future. But we did, the thing that they would take you through, they're learning civic government. I actually was the president of the school. And then I had a cabinet, the secretary, I had a vice president, I had this. And they gave us these titles, and we had certain features. We would go to meetings. I used to love it. They would let us out early, and so we could have our meetings of the cabinet. And all we did was talk about crap, and I said, you know what? We can make some money here. I swear. And they go, what are you talking about? I go, I'm the president. You're the treasurer. You're the vice president. I know this thing with the milk thing in kindergarten, right? There's money there. I think we could shake down the milk people. And we did.
Oh, Lord.
So, yeah, we shook them down. We went to the milk thing because I was prez, and everybody recognized me as prez. They voted for me, and I shook them down. And I said, look, you got X amount of milk here. Swear to God, this is a true story. They go, yes. I go, what do you do with the milk? Well, we give the milk back. I go, we got a lot of kids that can't afford the milk. Give me the milk. And they said, well, I'm not so – I am the president of the school. And I said, look, we'll kick you back a little something. They go, okay. So they gave us the extra milk. And the kids who couldn't afford the milk, we sell it to them half price. I was doing – I was working here. And because the milk would go for like $1.25, we'll sell it to them for 50 cents. And then we made a little money. We kick it back to the milk people. So we shook it down, and the money kept coming in. I paid my vice president. I paid this. This was better than when I raffled the homecoming queen in high school, and they said I pimped her out. She made a lot of money that day, my friends. She was in on it because, well, the queen court, I went to the queen. I go, hey, you know, there's an opportunity here. And she goes, what it is, Brian? I go, look, there's a lot of nerds that want to date you. There's money in this. She goes, are you going to pimp me out? I'm not going to pinch you out. You don't have to do no date. All you have to do is go out with a nerd. Come on. So we raffled her out. And we made a lot of money. We split it. She had a date with a nerd. I made him happy. She made happy. And she made a good $50. And then it got wind to it that Brian was pimping out the queen court. And then I went in, and Miss Wooden says, you really pimping out or queen court? I go, it's not pimping out. There's opportunities here. And she goes, I don't know what to do with you. I go, well, I'm on the football team. I bring a lot of money here. I'm really cute. And I got a great personality. And you look good today. She goes, stop it. It was our queen of deans. She goes, I don't know what to do with you. I go, I don't know either. When you find me the answer, you can reach me. I got to go to period. She just laughed. But she said, squash yourself. Quit being a jerk. I go, I'll try not to. And don't raffle out any more girls. Don't pimp them out. I'll try not to, all right? So we had that little sense of humor going with each other. You know, but I said, was it wrong? She goes, yes, it was wrong. Okay. Just want to get certified that it was wrong. I was that kid. I don't know what was wrong with me. I didn't take my Ritalin. And, you know, that's what happens. They said my Ritalin was a Tic Tac. Who knew? All right.
I think you needed a Molotov cocktail, Ritalin, and Adderall.
Exactly. Uh-oh. There's a siren. They're coming to get me. They're coming to get me.
Is that your meds
dropped off,
Brian?
Exactly. Yeah. The NYP, they're coming to get Cole. There he goes. They're on their way. I want to thank
Brian,
everybody.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I want to thank you, sir. Again, everybody, Stephen D. Edwards, my new friend, Joy at the End of the Tunnel. Go to Amazon right now and invest in your mental health. He can help you. Thank you, sir. And there he goes
thank
in
you.
Our limo. You're welcome, sir. Have a great day. Stephen D. Edwards. And we're going to end the show, but I do want to talk to Lucia for a minute because she doesn't get to talk. And I do know Mr. Barry was in, but he had to leave.
Miss Lisa's here.
Where's Miss Lisa? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, my yeah. God. Here she is. Miss Lisa. Oh, that voice. I haven't heard Miss Lisa in a long time. And here it is, 786, right, Miss Lisa? Right?
Yeah.
I have six other people here. I got two with 782s and Miss Lisa in the hood, everybody in the house. Welcome, Miss Lisa. How are you? She is the morning crew. She's the last of the morning crew. We don't have many left. We just went through that purge of the morning crew. Wait a minute. We got King, who's still left for the morning crew. Let's
Ellen.
Take roll call.
Ellen's there. Her Ellen's voice.
Ellen's here.
Yes.
King. Latia is the new member of the morning crew. Latia, this is
Hello,
Miss
Latia.
Lisa.
Hello.
And see who else is part of the morning crew that's still here. Joe's not part of the morning crew anymore. Joe has his own show, by the way, but he comes in and he listens to the show. Danny's busy. Stanley's busy.
Uh-huh.
He'll be coming in. That's about it. King, Latia, you, Ellen, Joe
uh-huh.
still comes around. Stanley will be coming in soon. That's it. Well, Miss Lisa, you were talking to me about this great artist you discovered.
Oh, my God.
And
you're
going to get back
video?
To me. Please let everybody know what's going on.
Oh, my goodness. It seems like I run into some amazing talent. It is crazy. So yesterday, I came across a gentleman and his son who were standing on the street corner, and you see that a lot in probably like New York areas. I ran across some people in Louisiana, well, a person in Louisiana. But yesterday, when I say this guy, Brian, did you see the videos that I sent you?
I didn't see the. Wait a minute. I did. I to be honest with you,
you
I didn't
got
really
to
go
see
on.
The video. Come on now.
You
Come
didn't send
now.
It to me, kiddo.
So,
I think you sent it to the wrong.
I did.
Let me see. Wait a minute. Hold on. Keep talking and let me
I
see if I can. Well, you
I
might have sent
it
to the wrong
email
one.
That you gave me.
Oh, you sent it to me in email. Okay.
Yeah.
Keep talking and let me look at my email.
So
I didn't get
the
notified.
Gentleman, both the gentleman and his son are foreign. I got to look and see what their nationality is. But they didn't speak. The father spoke English, but the son did not.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. What was it? Italian. They're Italian. So the son looked no more than 13, 16 at the most. But not very old at all. And
uh-huh.
when I say this gentleman, I can't explain it. He needs his own record label or
right.
be with a record label, signed to some kind of contract because
right.
he played like, oh, Jesus, how can I put it? Do anybody know the name Escobar? Hold on. I think it's Damien Escobar,
mm-hmm.
violinist. And
yeah.
on Pandora, if you go to Damien Escobar, it's nothing
right.
but violinist and, you know, musical to any type of song. It's just violinist
right.
or piano.
Right, right.
When this guy heard this guy play, and then I talked to Brian for a little bit, and then I went back. And I heard
mm-hmm.
the father play on his instrument, and to the life of me, I still can't remember what kind of instrument that is. It's accordion. That's it, an accordion. He was playing an accordion to these songs, and it did not sound like your traditional accordion. It sounded like he was playing a violin as well. When I say blew my freaking mind, you got to see the video, Brian.
Is this the one that it looks like he's playing an electric accordion on the sidewalk?
Yes.
Okay, I have to get off my headphones. It looks good. I have to get off my head, unplug my headphones, and get my speaker up.
Okay.
So it'll be a minute. Keep talking because it'll just be a minute.
Wait. Don't do that. Yeah. It's getting too close to 12 o'clock. We won't be able to get back in.
Wait, let me see what time it is, Kit. How much do I have left?
It is 11:41. You have 19 minutes left.
Listen to it after you get off the air, and then text me.
Okay,
but
hold on. No. It's 18 minutes. No. We can do this. Now, Lisa, there's two things I want to introduce what's happening, and I talked to this. Miss Lisa is also an author, everybody. And Miss Lisa, please tell people your book that you have on Amazon.
I no longer have my book on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You can only order my book through me, probably inbox me on Facebook at Miss. I'm not Miss Lisa. I'm sorry. I've been on there so long. Elisa Authors, and you can order your book that way. I will personally sign it and send it to you. It's called Before Dawn, a drama, action, everyday life kind of book. Okay, so if you sit and read it, you think you're actually reading somebody's life when it's all fiction. Nothing in the book is real. I have to keep saying that. Nothing in the book is real. So you can order it through me, Elisa Authors, or you can ask Brian. Go to Brian's page.
Right.
Hey, I want to buy Miss Lisa's book. And he'll definitely let me know, and I'll get it out to you. Right now, I'm making some changes, so I'll get another website up soon. But right now, it's down.
Well, I don't know. Can you hear me, kiddo? Can anybody hear me? Because I'm off my headset now.
Yeah.
What we're going to do, we got some surprises. Miss Lisa, I've been talking to some people, also talking to Ellen, and we've been doing this for a while, and I want to help a little more. We may be publishing, get involved in our own publishing company, meaning that soon, and I'm in the works right now, that we will have the ability to publish independent authors' books. So look for it soon.
Okay.
And we will be able to publish your book. And there's also, Ellen's on the fence today. And, you know, I gave her an opportunity because we're getting into the design fashion thing. And she usually jumps in.
Mm-hmm.
She usually says, great idea, ground floor. I can see it. Told her this. This one, she says, I'm going to wait. And I'm very disappointed. Because we're coming out with our designer brand called, right, Ellen?
Mm.
This is why she wants to wait. Here it is.
Designer brand for the show?
A designer label we're calling as Fat As Fuck. That's going to be our new designer brand, Fat As Fuck. And the reason Fat As Fuck is going to work.
I understand why.
Well, you know.
I can understand why.
She doesn't see the future. And I said that people are spending billions of dollars for being on diets and all this diets, and people spend billions of dollars to be cosmetic. People don't go off their diet. Sometimes you just have to say, you know what, I'm fat as fuck, and I like it. and all those people are just giving up on diets and just say, you know what, there's something for you. Fat as fuck.
Yeah, okay, this is why I wanted to wait. Okay, I wanted to see everybody else's reaction.
I can see that. It just depends on how you're spelling it too. If you're spelling it straight out, I sympathize. But if you're gonna spell it like phatfuk, or something like that, and then your design, depending on your design, then maybe I'll go ahead. But if you're gonna spell it straight out, F-A-T.
Right.
F-U-C-K. That's kind of like tasteless, if you ask me. But
that would be the uncensored area.
I would have to wait on it.
Yeah. Oh, both of you guys. But yeah, the commercial thing would be PHAT at FUK.
Okay.
And
okay.
Then
I can see that.
Yeah, fat as fuck, and we just want people to be proud that they're fat as fuck. And I'm doing a commercial hello. The commercial was going to be good. Hello, are you fat as fuck? Are you tired of skinny people putting it down your throat that you're just too fat to put your ass in a pair of jeans? Well, we got some good news for you. You get your big ass in our fat as fuck jeans, and you can look fabulous. So today, you are fat as fuck. Get them now.
I don't know, Brian.
There's a T-shirt. There's T-shirts, and I'm making baby clothes, fat as fuck kids. You know, when you see that fat baby, you go, that kid is fat as fuck. Look at his cheeks, puffy cheeks. Come on, those fat legs. That kid is fat, P-H-A-T, fat as fuck.
I don't know.
Thank you.
I don't know.
Get
I
on the ground floor. I'm telling you,
don't
miss.
No.
You're going to miss an opportunity of fat as fuck. Let's talk to Latia. She's new and she's just hearing it. She's very quiet. She's 24 years old. Latia, would you wear a T-shirt that says fat as fuck? Now, I've seen you on your profile, and you're not a fat girl. You're skinny. But still, no woman thinks they're skinny enough. I have never met a woman that says, I like the weight I am. You could be 98 pounds, and she'd say, well, I need to lose some weight, because we have it in their heads, right? Because women are never happy with their weight. They're just not. It's a psychological thing. It is, right? You're going to have a person who is anemic, and they go, I can lose a couple of pounds. You're nothing but bones. I can lose one. That's where she's a customer for fat as fuck. There you go. Latia, would you like the T-shirt?
I ain't that fat.
No? Latia. Latia?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like the T-shirt, fat as fuck? Really? I think this will explode in the hip-hop area, because I've seen some of those asses in the hip-hop area. They can use these clothes. All right. Okay, how about fat as fuck jeans, where you fit your bubble butt in there, and then you're just wearing these fat as fuck jeans, and when the people go by and they see your ass, they go, that's fat as fuck. Fat as fuck jeans? No. Come on. All right, working title. I'm going to still give her a gift. Give it to your fat friends. They'll love you for it. I'm saying it's time. It is time to accept the fatness. All right.
No, I wouldn't do that.
All right. Well, I guess
a lot of overweight women are. I shouldn't say a lot. Some overweight women are very sensitive when it comes to addressing their size. And one of the women that I know, she's very unhappy about it because she and I both were skinny at the same time. You know. And for her to blow up past me, and I'm still considered a little small, but not overweight. But her esteem is gone so far down because of her weight. I would not dare hand her that T-shirt.
I think. Can you imagine your husband on your anniversary comes in with a beautiful wrap box?
I wish he would. And then say, I know Brian gave it to you and told you to give it to me. And both of y'all was in the doghouse. I wish he would bring some shit on me. I'm sad as fuck.
I'm telling you, it's a great opportunity with investment. Get on the ground floor. Fat as fuck is here.
I just think it's time.
I may have
so here
sell
we go.
A t-shirt or two. I need some money.
T-shirt, the jeans will work. Don't forget our workout gear that we have fat people in tight clothing and the ass out, fat as fuck, and they have the designer thing. You'll be ahead at every gym. Here we go.
Why got to be fat people, though? Why got to be fat
okay.
people? Why can't it just be people? I mean,
because I want people to...
like a T-shirt for people? Or
it,
be
no,
fat?
Because it wouldn't work as a skinny girl because it's almost like bullying the fat people. If you had a skinny girl wearing a fat as fuck T-shirt, it's like, hey, you're bullying us. Quit bullying us. And we probably... She probably wouldn't fit in her size because we're just going to have big sizes. We're not having those little skinny bitches running around with our shirt and ruining our image. We're fat and we love it. We're fat as fuck and we love it. Yeah, big girl. Whole lot of men. They love a whole lot of women. I have here, so here's the story. Miss Lisa was minding her own business and she came across this person. Would you like to tell the story one more time? Because I do have him up here. I have a person in shorts. And a thing, is this guy?
Yeah.
Is this okay? So he is playing. Okay. So it's a regular street. It's like a neighborhood. And he's playing, I guess it's an electric violin or whatever. And it's like a street performer, basically. And here's and this is how he sounds. This is how he sounds. This is how he sounds. Doing this without reading sheet music, by the way. He is just
none.
Jamming. He is just jamming.
Yeah.
There's no sheet music whatsoever. Man, that's talent.
Oh, my God. This is crazy.
Right. And if you didn't know the song, it's Pink's song. And here's a little bit of the song that he was playing. Here's the song. That's a song right there. That's Pink. And this is him. Uh-oh, we're gone. This is him. Let me see if I can do a let me see. Okay, here we go. See if I can do this. Now, this is his beginning of it. Remember, he's not reading sheet music. He's all by ear. And he's on like an electric violin on the middle of a corner. He's not in the studio. We're not hearing the sound bounce off walls to give us that sound. And this is his beginning of that song. Yeah, look at that. And this is why, and this is the song. Here's the song. So cool, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Wow.
It's so freaking close.
Isn't it?
And you don't
from the start. You were.
Wow.
It
is
so
close. And again,
you don't hear any kind of discrepancy as far as skipping and guessing. And I mean, he's really playing this instrument. Just like that first woman that I tried to turn on, and she was more, I think she was more worried about immigration. And I was trying to tell her, that is not what I'm here for. I'm here to try and help you get off this corner and into a concert. If you're in a concert, you're going to make triple the time amount of money in that one night. Just imagine if you're doing 3 or 4 concerts a week. You don't even have to do that if you don't want
to. I would love to have
rather have
on
your children out on the corner, huh?
Right. I don't know if you can get in contact with these people. I would love to have them on the show. I would really love to have them on the show.
Oh, yeah. Can you
make that happen?
I can text him and let him know. Mm-hmm.
Right. I was very impressed.
We need someone to, I'm trying to figure out how, because the father can understand English, but very, very little. He uses the translator to totally understand. So how would that work?
Well, doesn't he have a brother or you said a father? I mean, this kid, again, I forgot to tell you,
no,
he looks like he's 14, 13, 14.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Something like that.
So
the son doesn't
it's like 13
speak English at all. The father
is
speaks very little. So I was able to communicate to the dad through the translator. So I was wondering how would it work on the radio trying to translate.
Who do you have to reach out to them since they don't speak English? Do you have the number of the translator to reach out to tell them? Or
I have the father's phone number. And I assume that he would either answer my call and have someone that does speak English to talk to me. So I'm going to see what I can put together, but I'll work it out. I'll work it out. I'll
I know.
You know, would it be a good day this out of the third? But I told him, I explained to him, you know, about the first woman that I tried to help that played just as well. You know, but the father, like I said, also plays an instrument. I sent you a short video of him playing this little thing that he plays. But I don't think a language barrier would be a problem at all.
Make it happen, baby.
I just think.
Make it.
Yeah.
Just make it. Make it happen.
That by him being willing, I mean more than willing, all smiles, humble. Him and his son, very, very humble people.
Right.
And I just told him that, you know, this is just the beginning. If he would allow me to, you know, make it happen. And that's what I called you. I mean, I can't do it by myself. We can't do it alone.
It takes a village. It takes a hammer to build a village. Don't worry about it. I got you.
There you go.
Do what you can. Do what you can to get his little talented ass on the show.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Do that. And that's the first step because he has some talent there. Like I said, I'm going to play the song, but he was spot on. He's about 14 to 15 years old. He's doing it without mm-hmm. sheet music, meaning he's just doing it by mm-hmm. by ear. And he's a mm-hmm. I would call him an artist, performing outdoors.
He's a musician.
Right.
Him and his dad are some real musicians. You got to see the video. I have more than one.
Right.
But the email would only let me send, you know, but so many. But
right.
The father plays just as well on his
wow.
little instrument. And, I mean, they're mm-hmm. very talented, two very talented men. And when I say marketable, the father and the son are very handsome. Very handsome men. The father
mm-hmm.
smell real good.
Yeah, they smell
exactly.
good.
So I'm like, okay, I'll look at that a little bit. Because I'm like,
oh, boy.
You smell good.
Yeah. I mean, that helps.
Oh, my God.
They do have good hygiene.
Yeah.
But make it happen,
yes.
Miss Lisa. I know that you can.
I got it. I actually will get off and contact him right after we get off the show.
Thank you, baby. You know how to contact me. You got my number. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Lisa here. God, I mean, not only an author, but talent representative, too. I mean, that is some good talent. That kid should have, he probably has professional training. If not, he is just a superstar. I can't wait. Miss Lisa
mm-hmm.
will make it happen because she's magical. I want to thank the lovely Miss Lisa, author, beautiful woman.
You're welcome.
And
thank you for the opportunity that will open
hey.
Up from this.
It will. I mean, I'm very impressed. Let him know that. The guy from the number one morning show on
mm-hmm.
the internet and Blog Talk, he was impressed. He wants you on the air right now. Get your butt on there. Thank you, Miss Lisa. It's always a pleasure. You don't know what a great treat it is to hear your voice again. You've been absent for about 3 or 4 months, and to hear your voice is fantastic.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're so welcome.
Get to some things. So
yeah. Well, you came out strong.
It's all gonna work out. Everything's good.
It will. I promise you
mm-hmm.
will. And I'm gonna say goodbye to you, and I'm gonna say goodbye to the luscious. You're the queen and the princess, Miss Latia. Thank you. Unless you want to say anything, Miss Latia, do you want to say anything before you go? Because you don't get to talk that much, and something on your mind. Okay, she's probably busy. Miss Latia, everybody,
uh-huh.
who supports the show. She's one of the new members of the morning crew. She's beautiful. She's 24. She has two children, I think one and two.
Uh-huh.
And she's uh-huh. doing her thing.
The baby.
Yeah. The little beautiful babies. She's doing it.
Oh, my goodness. She's doing
her thing. Oh, is she back? Is that Latia? I thought I heard her. Okay.
Yeah, no.
But she's doing her thing, and she's doing it good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and I did mention
mm-hmm.
King. Thank you, Mr. King, for your support with the morning crew. Mr. King Webb and our morning crew. He's not in the studio, but he's always – yeah, he's always with us, but today he's busy. Latia, and I want to thank the Vanilla Ice Ellen Johnson, Vanilla Chocolate. She was
Vanilla
in the
studio. Ice. Oh, my God.
Vanilla chocolate, Miss Ellen Johnson in the studio. All right, everybody, have a great day. I am so looking forward to this person coming on the air. Make it happen, Miss Alisa. Make his dreams come true.
Will do.
Thank you, baby. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Bye, sweetheart. Bye-bye. Bye, Bill. Bye, Latia. Bye, Miss Lisa. See you guys tomorrow.
Bye.
I let you see
the parts of me that weren't all that pretty. And with every touch, you fix them. Now you've been talking in your sleep. Oh, things you never say. Oh, tell me that you've had enough.
That's the song he was playing with his violin. This is the song he was playing.
Just keep
Miss Alisa is going to make it happen with these two great artists. That's Pink, the original. And you just heard the kid who's 14 or 15 do this on the street as a street entertainer. Hopefully Miss Lisa will get him on a show. I want to thank everybody coming here. Hey, thank you again, Latia. I hope you have a beautiful day. I hope everything goes good for you, sweetheart. I hope you enjoyed the show. Did you enjoy it? Okay. I hope you did. Wow. This is Brian Hammer Jackson, and I hope Latia enjoyed the show, and I hope you guys did. Again, Mr. Stephen D. Edwards, everybody, joy at the end of the tunnel. Thank you for the support, and we will see you tomorrow. What a special guest. We got another interview coming up. We got a good interview coming up tomorrow, too, everybody. It's a great interview coming up tomorrow. Our friend. You better move. Hold on. Tomorrow is the 7th. Is Mr. Yeah. Mr. Tremekis Muhammad will be on. And then he's going to be talking about his community, what he's doing in the community. He is a friend of Mr. King Webb. He's been a friend on the show. We have very interesting talk. We got a special guest tomorrow to be with us. And let's enjoy each other. Take care. And have our prayers and our love to all of our people out there who care about us. And it goes out to Latia also. Bye, everybody. See you tomorrow. One more shot, another round. End of the night is going down. Swing your body round. Going down.